Order. May I please have your attention? We have a quorum, and I hereby call this meeting to order. Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Quirk, and it is my honor to serve as your moderator for the second night of this 2019 annual town meeting. Before we get started, I do have a couple preliminary matters, nothing as long as last night, so don't worry. First, I'd like to recognize two town staff members who are retiring this year and thank them for their tireless service to the town. First is Debbie Dineen, Conservation Coordinator, who will be retiring in June. Is Debbie here? She has been a town employee for more than 35 years. And also, I would like to acknowledge Mark Herwick, our building inspector, who will retire in May after more than 12 years. So thank you both. I'd also like to thank the Boy Scout Troop number 63, led by Scoutmaster John Rotundo, for helping us with microphones tonight. This evening, we have Justin Nasdor, Andrew Simon, Sam Arkoff, Casey Tupta, Sam Varner, and Luke Yazdani running mics. So thank you, boys. And keeping us safe and secure tonight, we have police officers Stephen Milley, Timothy De Silva, and Erica Abro. And also, I would like to thank, yes. There were two Sudbury TV volunteers who inadvertently did not get thanked last night, and they are Skylar Werneck and Antonio Fontes. So many thanks to them as well.
A lot of the mics aren't turned on, so could you have them turn their mics on if they're not on?
Okay. Anyone on stage, could you double check that your mics are turned on? Thanks. I'd also like to call your attention to two upcoming town-sponsored events, both occurring on Saturday, May 18th. The first is Townwide Cleanup Day. You can sign up to adopt a street by visiting the town website. The other event is the Repair Cafe at the Senior Center from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., where you can get things repaired for free of charge. There's a small charge for the parts, but the labor is free. So there's more information on both of those things on the town website. And as people continue to file in, I would ask that everyone who can moves toward the center of the auditorium so that latecomers can find seats more easily. Unless, of course, you need to be in a certain location in order to be able to see the closed captioning. And speaking of the auditorium, last night I made a quip about the challenges of its layout, and I owe an apology to all the people who contributed their time and energy to the design of this building. This high school is a wonderful, I'm completely, utterly serious. This building is a wonderful gift to the town, and it took many, many countless hours of volunteer labor by a big group of very dedicated people to make it come into fruition. And I did not mean any disrespect to them with that comment. So thank you to those folks. And lastly, I want to remind people about the fire exits at the rear of the auditorium. Can I have your attention, please? Yeah, as you file in, please just keep walking until you find a seat. There should be some. There are a handful in the center of the lower portion here. I see some partway back. So just, if you have an empty seat next to you, could you please raise your hand right now so people can tell? And I'll give you just a few seconds to sort that out. And I just want to remind folks that we're going to literally take up every seat on the lower part of the auditorium before we open the balcony, so we do need to really maximize how we're using them. There are five or six right here in the second row, and I think it's also okay to take some of these reserved seats at this point. So feel free to take any seat that doesn't have a person sitting in it. Great, I'll keep going with a few of my preliminary things and then we'll get started. So as I was saying, the fire exits are at the back where you came in and also through the stage behind me. Bathrooms are immediately across the hall from here as well as outside the cafeteria. And if folks could just, I know it's hard to sort things out quietly, but if you could, we can just keep moving along here. So if I could have everybody's undivided attention, that would be great. Thank you. I'm not going to repeat what I said at the opening of town meeting about procedure, but if you need a refresher of this, or if this is your first town meeting, I urge you to consult the first section of the warrant starting on Roman numeral 1. This section provides a thorough summary of basic town meeting procedures. And lastly, a few quick reminders about debate. If you wish to be heard, please hold up your card and wait for me to recognize you. Then a microphone will get passed to you, and once you have the microphone, please begin by really slowly and clearly stating your name and address. All questions should be addressed to me, and I will decide how to direct them. In the interest of allowing a full but efficient discussion on a broad range of topics, I ask that you not reiterate points that have already been made or ask questions that have already been answered. And so if there are folks looking to sit, we still have at least, I'd say, 20 seats in the auditorium. So if you want to make your way toward the front is where there are many. And we will just keep going. Great. So with that, let's begin with Article 19, the DPW one-ton dump truck article. I will recognize Selectman Carty for the motion.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Moving the words of the article with a sum of $130,000 to be raised by taxation.
Is there a second? Great. And I will recognize DPW Director Dan Nason for the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Thank you. So this article is for replace a dump truck and plow. This article should not look strange to many of you that come to town meeting. It certainly doesn't look strange to me. This article has actually been on town meeting floor at the annual town meeting in 2016 as well as the town meeting in 2018. Both town meetings, it did pass previous. However, it failed at both ballot elections. So here we are again. This is to replace a 2000 GMC cab over swap body truck that you see in the photos there. As I mentioned at the last town meeting, and my predecessor mentioned at the meeting before that, it is aged, unreliable, and has multiple issues as listed there. We're looking to replace that vehicle with a new dump truck that's a multi-purpose vehicle used throughout multiple divisions. It'll be a smaller size, so it'll fit into a lot of the cul-de-sacs. It'll be a frontline plow vehicle. We're looking to buy the larger size Ford trucks, like an F-550, so we can actually mount a wing blade on the side and have it outfitted with a plow. Also have a slide and sander body. We actually purchased two about a year ago, and we find them very useful for the smaller parking lots. Madam Chair?
Oh, great. Sorry, Madam Moderator. Thank you. Would the Finance Committee like to say anything?
The Finance Committee does not support Article 19 on a vote of 2-6. So everybody remember the $250,000 from last night that we moved into the Capital Stabilization Fund, right? That was $250,000. It was in free cash, and it essentially cost us nothing because the money had already been collected. This is not being paid for from that. This is being paid for from the tax bill. And, in fact, we're raising taxes to pay for the dump truck. And once we raise taxes to pay for the dump truck, the following year when the dump truck's no longer there, we're still raising taxes. So rather than pay for this out of free cash, the town has decided to pay for this out of the levy, which is a permanent increase to the taxes. So the Finance Committee does not support this.
Thank you. And the Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen support Article 19.
Great. And I understand the CIAC would like to report on this, and it's Jamie Gossels for that.
Hi, Jamie Gossels, Spiller Circle, Chair of the CIAC. The CIAC unanimously supports this article, and I'd just like to add that this dump truck might not be coming forward in the future if we pass it tonight, but there's a very, very long list of capital items that will be. It's not like we can just take care of this and we'll be done with our capital needs, and that's the purpose of the stabilization fund that we voted last night. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And before we start discussion, I just want to invite folks that are in the back to come down. And if you're sitting next to a seat that has a reserved sign on it, I think at this point we can just take those off, unless it has a particular name, I guess. But so, yes, here, if you could take that one down. So people feel free to take the seats that previously were reserved for staff. So I see at least 8 or 10 seats in the first two rows, and there are a smattering in the middle here. If you could raise your hand, so because we can't really have anyone standing in the back. So if there's an empty seat next to you, raise your hand. And the folks that are standing currently, if you could please come take one of those seats, that would be great. Thank you. Yep. Great. All right, now I will be interested to see if anyone would... Well, I'll wait for 1 second. If folks could just come in quietly, then we can keep moving along. So thank you. All right. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 19? Yes, sir. The mic is working its way down the aisle.
Michael Ladd, 131 Concord Road. Could we have the reasoning on why this is being raised by taxation rather than free cash?
Yes, I'll recognize the town manager for that.
Madam Moderator, Melissa Rodriguez, town manager. Many of you heard my impassioned plea last night about how we need to begin to start to put more capital into our operating budget. Every year when I come to town meeting, I hear from all of you that we should be planning for how we're going to buy these routine items, that people don't want to have a ballot election every year. They don't want us to rely only on free cash. They want us to buy things we need from our operating budget. So this year, we made a decision. We decided that we wouldn't put all of our levy, all of our Proposition 2.5 towards operating. Instead, we would save a little bit, and we'd use it for our capital needs. And we're committed to doing that moving forward. Last night, we saved. In our capital stabilization account, we saved for capital for probably the first time since I've been here. And now I'm asking you to continue to bring this forward and fund this from the tax levy. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Houston.
Thank you. Mara Houston, Pekin Road. To follow up on Melissa's comment then, if this $130,000 is set for capital, will that part of the DPW budget always be used for capital?
Ms. Rodriguez?
Madam Moderator, that is my plan and my commitment to continue to use these monies for capital needs.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Excellent, Longfellow Road. Just 2 points.
Oh, I thought I was recognizing someone else. I hear your voice, but I don't see your face. Thank you. Can you hang on 1 second? Mr. Surrett, I'll acknowledge this gentleman first, and then I'll come back to you. Yes, sir.
Hi. Chris Thompson, 178 Horse Pond Road. Two questions. One, is there room within the tax levy to pay for this and then everything else that the FinCom has recommended tonight? And two, if we vote this down, can some of the $250,000 that was put in the stabilization fund last night be paid for this truck?
Okay. Again, the town manager.
Madam Moderator, with Article 19 and Article 20, we still have a balanced budget within Proposition 2.5. If we wanted to fund this DPW one-ton dump truck through that stabilization account, we would have to wait until a subsequent town meeting.
Okay. Great. Mr. Surrett.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Just 2 points. First, I think the hall has to give due deference to the fact that the voters have twice rejected this as a capital item. I think that trying to put it into the budget here to raise taxes here on the floor of town meeting without asking the voters to weigh in is inappropriate. We have these town referenda on overrides and debt exclusions because the people have a chance to voice their views on what the town should be spending. Second point, as you know from our conversation earlier tonight, the town's budget, entire budget for 1980 was $10,600,000. We have expanded the bureaucracy and the bloat in the town to the point of ridiculousness. And so I urge the voters to vote against this.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. Looking to the balcony so I don't forget you up there. I don't see any comments from the balcony. Anyone else on the floor? Yes, the gentleman in the yellow jacket. Hang on 1 second. The microphone is working its way to you. Thank you.
Joe Martino, 109 Maynard Farm Road. I agree 100% with what Ms. Rodriguez just said. If we don't put these items in the budget and we need them, they'll never get passed. Okay? This comes up over and over again, year after year. So I disagree with what the gentleman just before me said. I think they have to be in the budget, and we should be able to take free cash or any other item that we wish to prioritize this over to fund it. Secondly, the lady that spoke over here, was that our capital committee?
Ms. Gossels is on the capital capital improvement advisory committee. Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure what her position was on this item. Could she repeat that for
us? I can ask her to repeat her position.
Thank
yes.
You.
If you could hand the mic directly to Ms. Gossels, I'll recognize her. Thanks.
Yes, sorry about that. The Capital Improvement Advisory Committee unanimously supports, voted on a vote of 6-0 with one member not present to support this article.
Great. Thanks for clarifying that. Does anyone else wish to be heard under Article 19? I thank you for waving. Oh, yes, on the stage. Sorry, Mr. Semple.
So just following up on Ms. Gossel's comment, this is a question, I guess, for the Board of Selectmen. So Articles 19 and 20 raise the levy by $250,000, and also following up with the town manager's comment. So I guess my question to the Board of Selectmen is, are you committing from this point forward, forever into the future, that we're going to always reserve this $250,000 for capital spending, or when budgets get tight, are we going to then just defer it back into the standard operating budget to cover salaries and other pieces? Because it's one thing to use it 1 year, but is there a long-term commitment that this is forever going to be used to go fund capital?
Ms. Rodriguez?
Madam Moderator, we have millions of dollars in capital needs. We move them back every year because we don't have funding sources. This dump truck is just one of those many examples, and obviously a necessity since we continue to bring it up and prioritize them over the other dozens of items. I am committed to continuing to fund capital items using this $250,000 in the budget.
Thank you. Okay, and I see a card very far in the back, the gentleman in the hat. I'm sorry, I cannot see under the balcony. Yes, you. Thank you. A microphone. She didn't have a microphone. Right. Yes, sorry.
Siobhan Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. That's okay. My question is, if you're going to start, you know, funding for capital items like this, why wouldn't you just allocate a portion of free cash every year to fund that instead of raising the levy?
Ms. Rodriguez?
So we do. We do use free cash to fund capital articles. You'll see Article 21, we're going to use free cash to fund the fire truck. However, free cash is not a consistent and stable funding source. Over the last 10 years, free cash has fluctuated pretty dramatically. In fact, 1 year, around 2011, we only had $15,000 in free cash. So if we relied only on free cash to do our capital needs, there would be years when we would not be able to maintain our capital at all. And so the plan should be to use all different capital funding sources, free cash, the tax levy, savings and stabilization, grant funding, so that we can make sure, certain that on the good years and the bad years, we can fund capital.
So I just want to ask about, you mentioned 2011. Was that the year that we had a tax rate reduction? There was a year that we had a tax rate reduction, and then the following year we had a dramatic increase. So I feel like that's kind of an aberrant year. But each year we generate quite a bit of free cash that we now allocate twice a year during both town meetings. And so it just seemed to me, instead of increasing the levy, that there would be a dedicated amount in order to fund a capital fund for other purposes instead of funding it for specific purposes each year. I don't know.
If you'd like to respond, you may.
Sure. So, Madam Moderator, just to run through the history of free cash a little bit. In 2007, we had $419,000, 2008, $15,000, 2009, $488,000, 2010, $249,000, 2011, $674,000. Then we start getting more into the millions, and it stabilizes a little bit. But in 2015, only $1 million, 2016, up to $3 million, 2017, $2.7 million, and then 2018, down to $2 million. So it really can fluctuate pretty dramatically.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else on Article 19? I see no one, so we're ready to proceed to a vote. The quantum of vote required for this to pass is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Article 20, Concord Road Culvert Design. I will recognize Selectwoman Drettler for this motion.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $125,000 to be raised by taxation.
Is there a second? Thank you. And I'll recognize DPW Director Dan Nason again.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So Article 20 is for the design fees of the Concord Road Culvert. So a little bit of background on this. During calendar year 2018, the town completed a comprehensive inventory and assessment of over 160 culverts throughout town, and those are town-owned culverts. We actually inventoried more than that and assessed more than that. However, that inventory and assessment gave us a systematic approach to identifying the urgent culverts that we need to replace and kind of prioritize those. However, having said that, there's also the unscheduled failures that we have, and that's why we're here tonight for this Concord Road culvert. But the ultimate plan is to avoid that. So what I'd like to do is to start having multiple projects like this throughout the year. So one year we would hopefully have a design fee, the next year a construction fee, and then bounce back and forth. I've had very good success in multiple communities doing that. And that keeps up with our infrastructure needs. Next slide. So again, this is for the Concord Road culvert. Just to give you an idea of where it is, it's on the Concord Road North heading towards Route 2. Roughly in the vicinity of 1030 Concord Road in the 1000 block. And again, so I'd like to do this in a two-phase approach. I think I spoke at town meeting in regards to that, to try and do that going forward. So the first year we'd have a design phase, and then a subsequent town meeting, whether it's in the fall or the next spring, have the construction portion of the project moving forward. Next slide. So here's the Concord Road culvert. I'm sure anyone who travels up through 2 on Concord Road has seen it. Last spring, we had a failure of the head wall over there. That was a result of a guardrail that was impacted by a motor vehicle accident. Ultimately, I hope this person's not in the audience here tonight, but ultimately, if that was a motor vehicle that we actually had an accident report on, it was actually a hit and run, then we would have backcharged the insurance company, but this is on us since we don't have any known accident on it. So basically what happened was the guardrail was impacted. Subsequent to that, caused the head wall to overturn. And that overturned head wall, the concrete head wall, was actually obstructing the inlet portion of the culvert. Next slide. And this is just photos of the DPW picking up that portion of the head wall that was occluding the inlet, and then the concrete barriers that we put there to stabilize the edge of the roadway. Madam Moderator. Oh,
thanks. I was looking at your slides. great. I will now recognize the Finance Committee for a report.
Finance Committee is split on recommending this 4-4. Those in favor of the article agree with the need for the culvert replacement and are in favor of using the money within the levy. Those opposed believe this could be financed with free cash and there's no need for increasing taxes within the levy limit.
Thank you. And Selectwoman Drettler for the Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen supports Article 20.
And the CIAC, Ms. Gossels.
Jamie Gossel, Spiller Circle for the CIAC. The CIAC supports this article by a vote of 6-0.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 20? I see no one. So we will move to a vote. A majority is required to pass this. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Article 21, purchase of fire engine. I will now recognize Selectman Bob Hardy for the motion.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Move in the words of the article with the sum of $570,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? Thank you. And I'll recognize Fire Chief John Whalen for the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Engine 4 that we currently have is a 1997 emergency one, 1,250-gallon pumper with a 750-gallon tank. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. This truck was manufactured in 1997. Spent 11 years out on Route 20 and in North Sudbury, being the frontline truck in service. And spent the last 11 years in reserve service. The current mileage on is about 120,000 miles. And if you do vote for a replacement for this vehicle, it will, won't arrive until 2020 in the fall or in the summertime, which at time this truck will be over 23 years old. Next. Engine 4, like I said, is in reserve status and is only used when a piece of apparatus is being maintained or something is out of service. Engine 3, which currently sits up in North Sudbury, has had significant maintenance costs over the last year. Engine 3 has had a lot of electrical issues, and this is very, very common for the year and model of that truck. Next slide, please. Repair costs for Engine 3 in FY19 alone is over $26,000. Now, we spent a lot of time and effort trying to get this truck to be stable. The truck is 10 years old. I feel we have a good possibility of putting this truck into reserve status and getting another good 10 years out of it. Engine 3 was out of service in the months of August, September, and part of October in 2018 because we were chasing literally an electronic bug in the truck and that basically come down to wiring issues in it. The benefits of having a new pumper, obviously the maintenance costs of the new apparatus should be lower. Additional pump and water capabilities. The new truck will have a 1,500-gallon minute pump, and it'll also carry 1,000 gallons of water. 1,000 gallons in between 750. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it gives us two additional minutes of firefighting capability, and it's very important. We should also have a higher reliable performance with the truck, and it'll also come with updated technology. Thank you.
Great, thank you. I'll recognize the Finance Committee for a report.
Finance Committee supports the purchase of the fire engine by a vote of 8-0. It's approximately $100 impact to taxpayers, but it's coming out of free cash, so we've already connected that, collected the money.
Okay, thank you. And Selectman Hardy for the board.
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Okay, and the CIAC, Ms. Gossels.
Jamie Gossel, Spiller Circle. The CIAC supports this article by a vote of 6-0.
Great. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 21? I see no one. So we'll. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes. Mr. Schneller.
Bill Schneller, 37 Jarman Road. I'd like to ask the chief whether the length of the new truck is the same as the length of the old truck, and more specifically, if the length of the new truck would allow an ambulance to fit in front of or behind it without having to expand the fire stations.
Yes, Chief.
So to answer that question, the new truck will be the exact same size, width, and height as the old one that's currently in North Sudbury. The reason is that for that specifically is that engine goes to Concord a lot, especially in the wintertime, and we have to make sure that that engine fits in that Concord station in West Concord, because you can't leave your trucks outside in the cold, because it's not a good thing for
them. Okay, great, thanks. Would anyone else like to be heard on Article 21? Okay, then we'll proceed to a vote. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Article 22 has been withdrawn, so we will move on then to Article 23, Funding of Community Wastewater Management Program Impact Report. And I'll recognize Selectman Len Simon for the motion.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Move in the words of the article with the sum of $500,000 to be raised by borrowing from the Massachusetts Clean Water Trust pursuant to General Laws Chapter 29C or pursuant to General Laws Chapter 44, Sections 8, 7, or 8, or any other enabling authority, and to authorize the Treasurer with the approval of the Board of Selectmen to borrow said sum from the Clean Water Trust or otherwise and issue bonds or notes therefor, and that such bonds or notes shall be general obligations of the town, unless the Treasurer, with the approval of the Board of Selectmen, determines that they should be issued as limited obligations and may be secured by local system revenues as defined in General Laws, Chapter 29C, Section 1, and to authorize the Board of Selectmen to enter into loan agreements and or security agreements with the Trust or others and otherwise to contract with the Trust and the Department of Environmental Protection or others with respect to such loans and for any federal or state aid available for the project or for the financing thereof, and that the Board of Selectmen is authorized to execute any documents and take any other action necessary to carry out the project. And further, that any premium received upon the sale of any bonds or notes approved by this vote, lest any such premium applied to the payment of the costs or issuance of such bonds or notes may be applied to the payment of costs approved by this vote in accordance with Chapter 44, Section 20 of the General Laws, thereby reducing the amount authorized to be borrowed to pay such costs by a like amount. Period.
Thank you. I know you're going to miss that part of being a selectman, right? And is there a second? Yes, thank you. And I will recognize Dan Nason of the DPW for the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So Article 23, Comprehensive Wastewater Management Plan, if it's okay with the hall, I will just abbreviate that to be CWMP. A little bit of background on this. As you can clearly see, we apparently like studying sewer. There's four prior studies that date back well over two decades. I won't go through in the details of that, but I know many of you out in the audience here probably served on some of these committees that have studied this and probably have much more history and knowledge about those studies than I do. However, what we can state is that out of all of those studies, some of the things that were brought into light and particularly cited were that their environmental concerns related to the town's main drinking water supply was detailed in there, as well as a peripheral or tangential benefit, there's economic development that we can gain out of that. So what is a CWMP? A CWMP basically is more of a much more detailed study. It's much more robust than the studies that have been done in the past. It actually provides support to all areas of town. I'm not saying it's looking at sewering all areas of town, but it actually identifies areas of town, town-wide, that may actually benefit from sewer. That may be a small package plant, that may be an area that has been identified by the Board of Health of problem areas with septics, things to that nature. So it's a much more robust and detailed plan. It's similar in the fact that you do get local and regional planning goals. I think it's very good timing in relation to that because in my discussions with the community development director, the town master plan is underway now, so it would be a good time to implement the CWMP. And it includes a comprehensive public outreach and education program similar to the other reports that were presented. So we will also work with the Route 20 businesses. That was very similar to the other studies to determine townwide economic development. If a successful adopted plan was to take place, we will actually leverage qualifications for state loans and grants. And what I mean by that is this type of plan, where it differs from the other studies that were done, this would have buy-in by the regulators. So it will be reviewed thoroughly by the regulators, mainly DEP, and it will be accepted by them. Up to date, in my meetings that I had with DEP, they were not aware of the other plans that were in place. Oh, sorry, the other plans that were done. Once it was executed, this plan, it gives us a 20-year planning document. doesn't mean it obliges us to do anything. It's just a planning document. However, if there was some type of event that we needed to implement that plan, we have it there to pull off the shelf, and we can implement whatever portion of that plan we need to at that point. So if it's a health-related issue, we can implement just that. It doesn't oblige us to anything, but at that point, we've already had the regulator buy-in, and it's not something that they're just seeing firsthand. So just give you a little update on the scope. The scope, basically a rough kickoff meeting, coordinated with all the town staff, similar to the other plans, coordination, particularly with DEP. They'll go through details, review and update of the wastewater studies, the flows. A lot has changed since then. Number one item I can think of is Meadowwalk. All these steps takes us right through the regulatory process. And again, with particular coordination with town officials and key stakeholders. If you look at the scope that I just outlined on the last slide, basically this gives the project schedule. Again, those same tasks are identified here. We expect it to take approximately 22 months to develop and finalize this plan. And if you look at that 22 months spread out over time, basically if this was approved at tonight's meeting and we would go forward with the SRF borrowing, we would have a finalized project, a completion date roughly of March of 2022. So then, if you're talking about how do we finance this, back in August, we actually applied through the State Revolving Fund account to get us onto the intended use plan. Again, it does not oblige us to anything. That just gets us on the plan so we could actually be here tonight to see if the town wanted to move forward with this. We were actually allowed to borrow up to $500,000 through the State Revolving Fund at a reduced rate of 1.5% borrow. That's due to the fact that we are a housing choice community, and that's over a 20-year period. What a plan like this also does for us is if we were to proceed eventually with construction of any sewer anywhere in town, it opens us up to MassWorks grants. The other plans would not do that because it doesn't have any regulated buy-in.
Okay,
Madam
thank Honor. You. Yes. I will now recognize the Finance Committee for a report.
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 23. The impact on your taxes is only about $8, and we get to take advantage of the low-interest loans. And we recommend it by 8-0 vote.
Yes, and Selectman Simon for the Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
And does the CIAC have a position? No. Okay. Then I will open it up to general discussion. And I saw a card next to Ms. Gossels. It's Mr. Gossels. Yes.
So. Okay. Jonathan Gossels, 11 Spiller Circle. I don't think there's any question over all the years that sewerage has been studied that there's an advantage to our wetlands and our drinking water and any of those things along Route 20, that Route 20 is probably the wrong place for us to have our most commercial setting, but it is what it is. My problem with this is that for the benefit of 100 property owners, it's a windfall that all the town is going to pay to make those 100 property owners way wealthier. I think this should be financed as a betterment, not as a taxpayer-funded thing, that if the 100 taxpayers are going to turn properties that are currently not commercially viable into viable properties because of a sewer, and the ones that are viable, but they can turn them into restaurants and much higher valuable real estate, I think the property owners should be paying for this, not the whole town. So I'm not opposed to having sewers on Route 20. I just don't think the taxpayers should be paying for it.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. I think, Mr. Nason, I'd recognize you for a reply.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Yes, this study, again, just to reiterate, this is a townwide study. This is not going to be focused purely on Route 20, and the benefit will be for the entire community, not just the folks on Route 20.
Okay.
And, again, this is just the study, not the construction of the sewer.
Great. Thank you. Would anyone else like to be heard? Mr. Gossels, hang on one second. Let me see if there are other people who would like to be heard before I recognize you again. Yes, Mr. Tyler.
I agree with Mr. Gossels.
I'm sorry. Your name and address?
Ralph Tyler, 1 Deacon Lane, 01776. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm trying to get my thoughts together. I think I'm against this because I agree with Jamie Gossels.
Could you
there.
Please just keep the mic real close
yes,
to your
I'm
mouth?
I'm sorry.
Thanks.
I'm too excited here. I think that this doesn't reflect a reality of what our town is. Our town is a residential, upscale residential community that doesn't want high-density developments in most of Sudbury. Most lots had to qualify for very detailed septic tests before they could build on the lots, and part of our plans in the 80s and whatnot was to make stringent regulations so that people couldn't build in questionable areas so we could keep the density of the town down. So if we study sewers and then suddenly there's an idea that Sudbury residents somehow want sewers to replace their septic systems, which generally work pretty well for if you've got an acre lot or something like that, if your system fails, you put it somewhere else or dig out the other one and replace it. So I just don't see the benefit for anybody else but Route 20, and I think it should be, as a result, this should be rejected and then figure out a way to do something that qualifies for regulatory scrutiny and approval that covers the area of town that we need studied because... We rejected something in the middle of town and we moved it up to way up north to get it out of the center of town. We just don't want big developments in this beautiful town. I mean, that's why we moved here.
Thank you for your comment. I saw Mr. DePompei and then I'll circle back to Mr. Gossels.
Thank you. Just a point of clarification.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. DePompei.
I'm sorry, Mr. DePompei, 35 Haynes Road.
Thanks.
Just a point of clarification, perhaps a question, too. How does this have any effect on the MS4 regulations, or is this part of the MS4 regulations, or are we going to have to do something else because of MS4 since it's been passed as state law?
Mr. Nason?
It's certainly not going to hinder our MS4 permit by any means. It's definitely a box that we can check our MS on our MS4 permit, yes.
Mr. Nason, could you share with the hall what MS4 is?
Oh, yes.
I have no idea.
MS4 is the town stormwater permit through the NIPIDES, which is a lot of acronyms. MS4 is Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System. That's where the MS4 comes from. And NIPIDES is part of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit through the federal government.
Great. Thank you. Crystal clear. And so I see a new hand. If Mr. Gossels can wait, unless it's, I don't want to change course too far. I can't find Mr. Gossels. Do you want to say something else real quick on your previous point, Mr. Gossels, and then I'll recognize the gentleman behind you.
I don't think I've ever disagreed with Selectman Lynn before. Because his credentials on conservation and everything are just impeccable. I'm just concerned about what this will do to the Route 20 corridor, and to deflect it to say it's really about other parts of town isn't really true. This is about Route 20, and we should focus on that. This is about Route 20.
Okay, thank you for that. And right behind you, there's the gentleman in green, yes.
Harold Arkoff, 71 Harness Lane. I have a question. I have no idea the cost of a sewer system. I'm assuming it's millions of dollars. And down the road, we're going to have to pay for this over 20 years through a bond or some mechanism. Can anyone give me a concept of the magnitude of this? I mean, we're going to be voting later tonight to acquire land for $10 million. Our budget when I moved here was, I think, $34 million. It's tripled in 16 years. At some point, if we need it, we need it. But is this a project that could end up costing the town, say, $10 million, and tonight we're bickering over $130,000 for a truck? I'm just sort of curious what the eventual impact would be on the town budget if we go forward in the future with large-scale, you know, sewers throughout the town.
So I think I understood this to be just a proposal for a study to be done that will make us eligible in the future to possibly propose future development of sewers.
Well,
this does not oblige us to...
No, it doesn't oblige us.
Just clarifying.
Right, but it puts us on a path that says if we do X, Y, and Z, we're going to explore this. And I'm curious what the end cost is going to be.
Okay,
I mean, I'm just
I'll
sort of curious. I mean, I have no idea what a sewer project is, but I'm sure it's millions of dollars.
See if I don't know if either the town manager or Mr. Nason would like to say anything on that.
Yes,
if you
Madam
want.
Moderator, it's yes, it will be in millions of dollars. It all depends on the scale of the project, but we won't know that until you develop the study and identify the certain areas and how far you want to build that out. But it's about. In my mind, it's about good planning, so you have that planning document if, in fact, you have the situation where you have to implement that plan. So at that point, you can just pull it off the shelf and you have it all documented versus saying, okay, let's start this now because it's going to be a two-plus-year process even to figure out where we need to go with this.
Great. Thank you. And I realize I've been neglecting the balcony. I see someone way in the back. I will recognize you when you have a mic.
Hi, Miguel Doran from 28 Beechwood Avenue. Just to follow up on that, how long will that study be good for? We've had four studies in the past. We've not taken any action on that. You're saying it's good to have a plan for us to have. When would that study be not valid anymore?
Yes, Mr.
Madam Moderator, it's a 20-year planning document, so it's good for 20 years.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to be heard on Article 23? Yes, ma'am.
Joy Fantasia, 15 Willard Grant Road.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Joyce?
Yep.
Fantasia.
Great.
15 Willard Grant Road.
Thank you.
I'm absolutely in favor of clean water. I'm absolutely in favor of protecting our aquifers, and I'm absolutely in favor of managing wastewater. But I'm very nervous about this proposal because I also see it as the long-term intention being to intensify development on Route 20. And it certainly would enable that, and that's a discussion that's been had in town for a long time, putting sewer systems in along Route 20, and that enables more dense development. So I would be opposed to that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. Anyone else? Yes, in the red shirt here in front.
William Miniscalco, 126 Hemlock Road. I support the article, and I get the impression from what I'm hearing that many people are misunderstanding it. This is to fund a study, not to install anything. If it were later decided that we wanted to do something based upon the study, like install sewers on Route 20, it would have to come back to the town for a vote and probably a two-thirds vote. So you're not committing yourself to anything at this point other than having an intelligent assessment of what the prospects are.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. The gentleman a few rows behind, and then I see.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I am inclined to support this, but I think it would be helpful if we would have a restatement of the compelling reasons, saying the top three compelling reasons to support this, and what the disadvantages we would or what risks would we be facing by not voting for this tonight. I know that, you know, water tables are changing. In many cases, they're rising considerably, making it much more difficult to install septic. 15 years ago, my system failed, and there was no place on the flat part of my lot in which I could replace it. And I had to go up the hill with a terrace thing, with a pump chamber, and all of this. And 15 years ago, it cost me $30,000. And I was told when I had to do some repairs last year on the electrical system that was cheap by today's standards. So I think we're all faced with a situation, you know, whether you want more development or you don't want more development, or if you want sewer along Route 20 or not, that we all as a town may be faced with critical situations where it's going to become increasingly more difficult to replace the septic systems that we have at a much larger cost. So I'd like to hear the reasons pro and con for supporting this. Thank you.
Okay, I'll recognize Mr. Nason for a quick summary.
Yes, thank you, Madam Moderator, and thank you for the question. I'd say that the main reasons are to provide environmental resource preservation and protection, as well as it allows us to, it's a good planning document, as I'd mentioned. It's a very good planning tool, and it leverages us for state and local grants. And a plan like this would allow us to be eligible also for the MassWorks grant if this ever were to get to a construction phase. Any of the other studies does not allow that.
Okay, great. Mr. Schneller.
I'm not sure who would best answer this question. Bill Schneller, 37 Jarman Road.
Thanks.
The question I have is about the funding source and about the potential for the Sudbury Water District to be involved at all here. And the reason I ask is, I don't know if everyone in the hall is familiar, I wasn't always, that Sudbury Water District is a separate entity that has, you know, we pay our water bills to. A few years ago, they seemed to have plenty of cash. They said that they could build a brand new office building facility for themselves without having to raise our rates. And I saw drinking water on here. So do they have a stake in this, and should they be funding part of it?
Mr. Nason.
Yes, Madam Moderator. Yes, the Water District would be a stakeholder in this as well. The funding, I can't answer that.
Okay, great. So I feel like we've heard pros and cons. Is there a question out there that has not been addressed or a point that hasn't yet been made? Thanks. I'm being pointed toward the way back. Yes, Mr. Surrett. And then I see there was a hand in this general area that I'll get next.
Hank Surrett, Longfellow Road. I see this as the camel's nose under the tent. If we do the study, we get the data goes to DEP. DEP will then mandate us to spend tens of millions of dollars to build a sewage treatment plant along Route 20. If we don't do the study, and there's no compelling reason to do it, we're not going to be drifted into that trap.
Okay, thank you for your comment. And was there someone, okay, I'll go to right in the front. Yes, sorry. Oh, yes, Mr. Garvin.
Steve Garvin, 26 Bowditch Road, speaking as chairman of the planning board. So the planning board did vote to support this article. We believe that it is always in the best interest of the town to be proactive in our planning. We are also in the midst of a master planning process, and having this information will allow us to have a critical point of information that will allow the master plan to continue in a more productive way. Additionally, I will say as a civil engineer on my own that DEP would not compel us to do anything based on this report. It's just good planning for us to understand if something were to change or what we would need, that we have a plan in place. There's nothing in this that would compel us. There's no regulation in the state that would require us to do a treatment plant based on what's going on with this study.
Okay, I'm going to take one more comment. Mr. LaFerrera, you've had your card up a lot, so
We'll do that, and then we'll proceed to a vote.
Joe LaFerrera, 47 Windmill Drive. I have no doubt that this would be a valuable report to have. I'm just concerned that it is an expensive report to have in a situation where the town hasn't demonstrated that it has buy-in either from the residents or generally that it will be moving ahead and need this report. I think the master plan that was mentioned shortly ago is an important document, and I have no idea whether the beneficial loan that we are offered may be available in the future, but it would seem to me that finding out whether our master plan anticipates the need for sewers or the need for this report in some other way might be the predicate to deciding whether or not to invest $500,000.
Okay, thanks. I will now proceed to the vote. The quantum of vote required for this is 2/3. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by more than 2/3. Article 24 has been withdrawn, so we'll move on to Article 25, the Camp Suetaro acquisition. So if anyone is in the lobby waiting to come in, I'll give you 1 minute to do so. We have at least 8 or 10 seats on the floor of the auditorium and 20 or more in the balcony. So we still have capacity in this room. So I don't see people flying through the doors, so we'll just go ahead. I'll now recognize Selectwoman Brown for the motion.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $11 million.
Let's try.
Better?
Hang on. Give the booth one chance to turn it on.
Hello?
Yeah, I think it's on. Let's just try again.
This one working.
I was told not to switch mics. Don't do that. It makes the TV people really upset. Thanks. So just try again, Pat. Thanks.
Okay. Is that better?
Perfect.
Yes. Okay. Move in the words of the article with a sum of $11,300,000 to be raised by borrowing, and further to authorize the Board of Selectmen to accept a deed restriction on the property prohibiting field lighting, fixtures taller than 20 feet, and the installation of cell or similar communication towers, and further to authorize the Board of Selectmen to accept as a gift certain tangible personal property associated with the operation of Camp Suetaro, and certain intangible personal property, including all right, title, and interest in, and to, Camp Suetaro's business names and intellectual property, including internet domain names, trademarks, service marks, trade names, logos, corporate names, client lists and registrations, registered and unregistered copyrights, applications of registration, therefore.
Thank you. Is there a second? Yes, thank you. And I'll now recognize Town Manager Rodriguez for a presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Melissa Rodriguez, Town Manager. Description of Camp Suetaro. It's approximately 44 acres located at 1 Liberty Ledge. It's listed as a priority parcel on the 2013 Open Space and Recreation Plan Summer Day Camp, celebrating its 60th anniversary. It has numerous active and passive recreational and educational activities, 33 lots that are separately assessed, 31 of which are buildable. Currently, the camp operates under a special permit granted by the Town of Sudbury's Zoning Board of Appeals. Any new camp that was going to be operated there would require a compliance review by the ZBA. The property is located in the single residence A zoning district. The total building square footage is approximately 30,000 square feet. There are 25 buildings across the site, some of which are sheds, 5 of which are residences, which would be delivered to the town vacant. There's 2,620 linear feet of roads. The Planning Board approved a subdivision for the property in 1998 for 35 residential building lots. That subdivision plan has since expired because certain conditions were not met. In order for the subdivision to be completed, an extension or new approval by the Planning Board would be required. The conditions that were not met was that the subdivision was never acted on. They never put the roads in. They never built the houses. This is the map of what we are interested in acquiring. Some pictures of the property for those of you that have not been there. This is an aerial photo of the property. Currently, the town has a letter of intent, which is a good faith agreement between the town and Liberty Ledge LLC to purchase 33 parcels consisting of 44 acres of land with improvements. The purchase price, which is based on the assessment, is $11,269,700. The letter of intent includes a donation of camp assets, including tangible and intangible personal property, all the rights and interests in Camp Suitaro. The purchase is contingent on town meeting and election approvals. There are two land restrictions, which we heard in the motion, no cell phone towers and no field lighting over 20 feet. The tentative closing date is October 1st, 2019, and the vision is to use the land for open space, recreation, preservation, and other municipal purposes. And I recognize that there's been some debate about whether or not this is a preservation. And I recognize that it may not be a preservation in the way we've often thought of preservations here in town, but to me, it's a preservation of the land in its current form. It's a preservation of the form protection, to help make certain that the parcels are developed or not developed in line with the vision of town meeting. This is the estimated tax impact of the acquisition. So we typically do a 20-year bond here in town. It does require a Proposition 2.5 vote. We did calculate this at a 4% interest rate. Speaking with the finance director today, we actually think we'd do a little bit better, maybe around 3%, but we're going to keep it here because this is where we've been talking about it. It would be debt payments that begin at $1,014,273 and reduce annually with a final payment of $586,024. The average single-family home in Sud Perry would pay $168 in the first year, decreasing to $98.43 in the year 20. And if we were in a vacuum and everyone's value stayed the same, the average single-family home, which is about $745,653 in assessment, would pay $2,636.60 over the 20-year life of the bond. We also calculated for a 30-year bond. We calculated this at 4.5%. Again, I think it would come in lower. We are a AAA-rated community. Debt payments on the 30-year bond would begin at $882,793 and reduce annually with a final payment of $392,561. The average single-family home in Sudbury would pay $145 in the first year, decreasing to $64 in year 30 and pay approximately $3,137 over the life of the bond. As part of this exercise and analysis, the town did do an appraisal. The property was appraised for its highest and best use, which was single-family residential homes, and the appraised amount was $10,370. A lot of people have asked why we would be paying for the highest and best value if we're not planning on building single-family homes there. And I say to you that it would be like you selling your own home and you get an appraisal and the appraisal comes in at, let's say, $500,000. And someone comes and they offer you $30,000 because they're going to use your property to run track instead of have a home there. You wouldn't accept the $30,000. You would want the highest and best use. And so that's what we had to offer in order to compete with other bidders. And as I said, we ended up offering the assessed amount, which was $11,269,700. The property is interestingly assessed as 33 separate tax parcels, not as one parcel, due to that subdivision plan. And we currently collect $201,840 on the property. This is just a table of land preservation and land acquisition in Sudbury. As you can see, we've acquired quite a bit of land over the years. Doing math, I came up with 750 acres. That we've acquired, not including Camp Suitaro, but most recently Broadacre Farm. And we've acquired lands in all different ways. Sometimes a fee simple, sometimes an agricultural restriction, sometimes a conservation restriction, and sometimes just development rights. But this one we are planning to purchase in fee simple, meaning that we would own it. As part of the analysis, we thought about what the potential future taxes would be from the 31 homes. And what we did was we estimated new revenue. So the appraisal states that homes in that area and the subdivision surrounding it in 2015 to now sales were between $1.15 million and $1.675 million, with most sales between 1.3 million and 1.5 million. And I should note that most of those homes were built in the mid to late 1990s. So we did the analysis four different ways. We did the average single family home, that $745,000 number. We did the low range of sales in that area, the 1.15 number. We did that mid-range, that 1.3 to the 1.5, which was the 1.4. And then in the high end, so these are going to be new homes, not homes built in the 1990s. And we used the $2 million number. We estimated the new tax revenue from those homes. We took away that current revenue that we're already getting. And we figured out what the net increase to revenue is. I should add that when we have a property owner that goes away or a development that goes away, we don't lose those taxes. The levy doesn't go down, right? So we don't lose that money, which is why we netted it out. The next thing we did was we figured out the municipal expenses, right? We tried to, and it's difficult, especially when you don't have a firm development that you're looking at. This was actually easier with Corey North, and I could say, this is how many apartments we're going to have. This is how many age-restricted we're going to have. It's harder here because we have to make more assumptions. So we took different varying number of children per home and different general municipal costs, and we figured out what we thought the municipal expenses would be. So based on this chart, the 0.59 children is based on Julian, Greystone, and Cobblestone. Those are 4, 5, 6-bedroom homes that are in the area surrounding Camp Suataro. The 0.69 number is the average school-age children per home in Sudbury. The 0.73 number is the average school-age children per non-age-restricted home in Sudbury. The 1.25 number is the number of school-age children from Anthony Drive, 4 to 5 bedrooms, failing new development. The 2.6 number is the number of school-age children from Huckleberry Road, and that's a 5 and 6-bedroom homes, also a newer development. So what we did was we took that analysis, and we figured out the number of students, and we figured out the cost to educate those students. And the way we did that was we used the similar analysis that we used when we did our last assessment with Quarry North, and we figured out the instructional cost. So when you get a new student, you don't get a new superintendent. Lights don't cost more. Capital costs aren't increased that already exist. Your debt doesn't increase. But your instructional line increase. Textbooks are more expensive, right? You need more food in the cafeteria. You need more toilet paper. And so those are the things that we apply that instructional line to. And that's how we come up with the number of $12,814 per student. And then we bring it forward. We figure out the total municipal expenses, and then we went ahead and figured out the taxes that would come in for each of those homes, which I presented two charts ago, and we figured out the excess and deficiency. So if you had the $1.15 million home, and you had 1.25 children coming out of that home, plus your municipal expenses, not just children, but the cost of fire, police, recreation, the library, Council on Aging, you would have a negative $94,748 impact on the budget. If you had the $1.4 million home and you had 1.25 children in those same general municipal costs, you would have a $44,000 surplus in the budget. As I said, it's very difficult to figure out where we would end up on this map, and I thought it would be very interesting for everyone to understand what the range could look like. Next, we also looked at the camp's financials. We review the unaudited profit and loss statements, 3 years of tax returns, a cash flow and balance statement. Those documents were all protected by the non-disclosure, so while I reviewed them, the finance director reviewed them, and the Board of Selectmen reviewed them, we did not release them to the public, other than a general synopsis of that profit and loss. Madam Moderator, could I have more time?
How much more would be useful?
Hour and 30 minutes? No. 5 minutes, maybe?
5 minutes. I'll need to get permission from the hall. All in favor of granting Ms. Rodriguez 5 minutes. Thank you. It passes by more than a majority, so please proceed for five
Thank
more.
You. So based on those financials, we determined that the camp brings in tuition of $3,328,380 a year. The camp's expenses, so the expenses to run the camp, are $2,324,711, which means that in 2018, the total excess revenue before anything that was paid to the owners, so those are non-camp expenses, was $1,014,357. This is just a summary of those, what those expenses look like, $1.1 million in payroll, $191,000 in repair and maintenance, $151,000 insurance, et cetera. When the Board of Selectmen made their offer, their vision was to use the land for open space, recreation, preservation, and other municipal purposes. This is a unique land acquisition because there is the possibility and opportunity for future use, some of which could bring potential revenue sources. We have explored and discussed some possible scenarios, including one, just maintaining it as open space and recreational space, two, continuing to run Camp Suataro, or three, leasing the camp to a private entity. My recommendation today would be to immediately put out a request for proposals and enter into a lease for 2020 summer. This would give the town the opportunity to best plan for and prepare for the future use. If we were going to maintain it as open space, based on the cost that we received from the camp, we think it would cost approximately $144,500 a year to maintain. That would just be for maintenance, no employees, nothing else, just maintenance. One thing we need to consider is the accessibility. So under the American with Disabilities Act, which covers local government operations, services, programs, and activities must be accessible to people with disabilities in the most integrated setting possibly. We may be required to remove barriers in existing buildings where it's readily achievable. There's no requirement to take any action that would result in an undue financial and administrative burden. What we would do is do a full accessibility inventory of every building and facility to determine what required changes may be, and there may be none. We don't know at this point. To me, the ultimate goal should be integration, so it makes me sad when I hear people argue that we shouldn't purchase the property because we may need to make it accessible to everyone. That's just a personal note for me, but I think that this is a community that's been very inclusive and welcoming to me, and I think we want to be inclusive and welcoming to everyone. So just a minor. The cost of the study is approximately $25,000 and would take about 3 to 4 months. We would actually do the beginning work by drone, which is exciting. Option two, run Camp Suataro as it is. So as we know, based on the financial documents that I've reviewed, Camp Suataro is profitable. They operate 8 weeks a year, have 4 full-time employees and 175 seasonal employees. They have 1,300 campers per summer with 600 per day per their permit. It is unlikely that we would be able to start running Camp Suataro on our own next summer, and that's why I make the recommendation that we do the RFP. We would have to create an enterprise fund. We would run this like we run the pool and parks, fields, and the transfer station like we voted on last night. And the only option for us to do that, even if we created the enterprise fund at fall town meeting, is to fund it at a May town meeting, which starts the budget on July 1st, which means we could not possibly run the camp that way next summer. So what I'm saying is, let's do the RFP. Let's find an operator. We enter into a 1-year deal, a 2-year deal. We could have the possibility for extensions. Maybe it works out great for us. But I think it gives us a lot of options. And then again, purchase property and lease to the camp. And there's many models like this all over the nation. We do know that Camp Suataro does pay $575,000 in rent to its LLC for 8 weeks. Then they pay the taxes, so it's approximately $375,000 in rent. Under this scenario, the town would have to enter into a competitive RFP process under Massachusetts General Law, Chapter 30B, in order to enter into a lease or camp management contract. We have had people reach out to us. A really good example of this is Camp Everwood in Sharon. And he actually, the owner of that, reached out to me yesterday to say that he's interested in this property to lease as well. So this will be interesting. But it is owned by the town of Sharon and leased to a private operator. The town of Sharon paid $5 million for it, and the private operator actually put $4 million into the camp. The tenant made all the improvements on its own. It is a day camp. It has a 3-year lease with 2 10-year renewals. Their rent started at $65,000 in 2010 and increased annually up to $118,000 in year 19. But interestingly, they have an agreement that if their proposed taxes were more than the rent, they would pay the proposed taxes. And so far, their proposed taxes have always been more than the rent, so they actually pay that. There is community access to trails during non-camp hours. It's open and accessible, they told me, every day except during camp. And I can stop there.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I will now recognize the Finance Committee for its report. Thank you for your presentation. All right. I will now recognize the Finance Committee.
So I've got a brief presentation.
Do you want to come down to the podium, or are you fine at your seat?
I'm fine up here.
Okay.
So the Finance Committee does not recommend the purchase of Camp Suitaro in a vote of 2-5. Next slide, please. So this is the table that we put up at the beginning of town meeting. You can see now we're now in the debt exclusion category, and this is where we would go off and raise this as a bond. Next slide, please. So positives from the committee, there's unexplored options for revenue that the town manager talked about. You know, once if we don't buy it, once it's gone, it's gone. You can read this beautiful piece of property. It's on the town land acquisition list. But some of the concerns has to do with unknown costs for compliance, demolition, maintenance, competing capital asset priorities, and we'll walk through that in a little bit. The one thing to remember on this is that if we do buy the property, the capital exclusion will hit the cost bill, will hit your tax bill no matter what. So as soon as the town goes off and raises the $11 million, that shows up on your tax bill. It's not the other costs that are more operationally. It's not clear if they will or will not hit your tax bill. They'll definitely impact it in some way, meaning that they could be the town will have to pay these things anyway, so it could be a reduction of services. But you've noticed your taxes tend to go up the full 2.5% per year, and then the town and the schools fit into that budget what they can. Next slide, please. So although the committee voted 2-5 on this, the committee did unanimously agree with the revenue models that are up here. And so we agree. So the P&Ls we're supportive of. So the first one is option A, which is buy and operate as open space. Our confidence on this is high. And the $130 tax impact, what we did is we looked at the average debt service over 20 years, which is about $800,000 per year. So it's roughly $130 for the average home. And then there's another $50 that would hit the levy somehow. And this would be things such as the maintenance, the other items that the town manager talked about. Option B would be buy and lease it. You heard the town manager talk about revenue figures between $375 and $575. That's what we use to come up with the tax impact if we were to buy it and lease it. If we were to go buy and lease it, we'd have to create a fund mechanism so that the money that came out of Suitaro could then be used to go fund the debt for Suitaro. I think someone asked the other night, what was the revolving fund? That would be a good example of that. Actually, I don't want to say that. I'm looking at Dennis. Okay. An enterprise fund. Enterprise fund. There we go. We'd have to put an enterprise fund for that. Because otherwise, otherwise the risk of that is you'd be paying out the debt here for the camp. The revenue would be coming in over here, and it could be used for other purposes. So if you actually really wanted the revenue from the camp to impact the debt service, the town would have to go structure an agreement to go to a fund to go make that happen. And option C is the development, which basically is to go do nothing. In that case, we use the town manager's estimates. We bracket it a little bit closer to be the $1.5 million to the $1.15 million to $1.4 million house. And we use 1.25 to 2 students per household. And that gives you a impact on your tax bill to positive $8 to $65. But again, remember, this, whether this actually hit the, it, we have to go pay for these services somehow, whether it actually ended up impacting your tax bill or whether the town and schools decided to do other ways to mitigate that would be to be determined based on what happened. So, for example, maybe they end up increasing class sizes so they don't have additional teachers. There's a variety of factors that would go where that actually ended up hitting your tax bill. Next slide. This is a very quick slide. This is all I think the town manager had. No, actually not. This is a new slide. So this is all the open space that's currently, or this is all the parcels of land that's currently is on the plan to be acquired by the town theoretically. You notice that 644 is the total at the bottom. Now you can take some of these off the top, like you've got Neshottuck in there. I don't think Neshottuck is selling anytime soon. I don't think SS&T is selling anytime soon. But nonetheless, they're tracking these. So what you can see is that this is 44 out of around, say, 500 acres that the town ultimately would want to go purchase. Not in a lot of cases, the number of buildable lots is not known, reported. Notice Cavicchio up there at 135 acreage and 60-plus lots on there. The final concern on this was the competition with capital projects. Next slide, please. So this is what's in the capital. This is what's in the capital plan for major projects over the next 5 years. You can see you've got town hall restoration, construction of new fire station 2, and new Fairbank community center / Atkinson pool. Again, all these would have to get voted on, but this is some of the competing projects. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll now recognize the Board of Selectmen for a report. I believe it's Selectwoman Brown.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article 3-2.
Thank you. And would the Park and Rec Committee like to be heard? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Moderator.
Yes.
Do you have my mark? Thank you. Hi, my name is Robert Began. I'm the current chair of the Park and Recreation Commission. And actually, before I start this slide here, I just want to say that the Park and Rec commissioners, all commissioners, have visited Camp Suataro, if not once. I know myself personally two times. And, you know, I don't think there was any question as to the beauty and the amenities that were there. But with that being said, so we had a meeting on March 18th. We had an executive session with the town manager, and we also had Dan Nason, the DPW director, and Pat Brown, who's our park and rec rep from the BOS present. The town manager made a presentation to the commission that discussed the options for the commission to consider. All information presented to the commission during the session could not be discussed publicly due to the non-disclosure agreement. After executive session, a motion was made to support the acquisition of Camp Suataro and recommend to the Board of Selectmen. The commission voted 1 in favor and 4 against the motion. So why did the Park and Rec Commission vote this way? I've been asked this numerous times over the last couple of weeks, and I'll do my best to answer that. So the Park and Rec Commission was not part of any planning discussion with the Park and Rec Department or any other town staff regarding the camp acquisition or plan for its use if acquired. No financials at the time of the executive session were presented to the commission. No plan on how to integrate the Sudbury's public camp model of $503 per two-week session versus Suataro's high-end private camp model of $1,620 per two-week session was presented. There was no business plan for how the town would run the property and the camp. There was concern regarding the expertise and staffing to run the camp. We currently have, the Park and Rec staffing that's taking care of our Fairbanks Center and all the programs there, as well as at the pool. And I can tell you, it's not an easy job. There's a number of issues that we have. We've increased fees a number of times because there's always challenges. The pool is a big deal. So we have concern regarding the cost to operate this camp as a town-owned property. Infrastructure concerns and costs to the towns. The fields have limited utility as playing fields with no infrastructure to support them as far as parking. And then we also have the ADA, which has already been mentioned. There's concern regarding the impact on existing park and recreation programs, including the Atkinson Pool. And there's concern about the status of the proposed new community center for future park and recreation plans if Suataro is purchased. The Park and Recreation Department operates under several enterprise funds. Enterprise funds require expenses to be offset by revenues. Thus, in order to operate Suataro under the guise of the Park and Recreation Department, a detailed operating plan is needed. This plan should include all programming, staff, as well as an operating budget. However, given the lack of information and, more importantly, a plan that would enable the Park and Recreation Department to operate this camp and its existing programs, the Commission could not vote for this acquisition. I don't know if you got my latest one, but it's okay. I'll just say. So we've had some new information come available since the executive session. So since March 18th, some new information such as the financials have become available. But the commission at its most recent meeting, which was a week ago this past Monday, decided not to reconsider its position because a detailed operating plan that includes all the programming, staffing, operating budgets, et cetera, is not available. And a number of our concerns, if not most of the concerns, had not been addressed.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Moderator. Thank you. And now I will recognize the CIAC, Ms. Gossels, for their report.
Jamie Gossels, 11 Spiller Circle for the CIAC. The CIAC does not recommend approval of this article by a vote of 1 in favor, 4 opposed, with 1 abstention. The committee generally favors the purchase of open space in Sudbury. Many, if not all, members indicated that they have voted in favor of open space purchase at every opportunity, in some cases for over 40 years in town. But in this specific case, those opposed felt that the following issues outweigh the otherwise desirable acquisition of open space, and many of them have been enumerated by other committees before. There are too many unknown costs and operational questions that aren't answerable right now. These include capital projects on the property not accounted for in the purchase price, such as winterization, ADA compliance, and repairs to existing buildings. $11 million is a lot of money, and we know that there are several other major capital projects looming. We are being asked to make a decision in a vacuum. We had only about a week, actually, and we met last night to discuss this project, and we're very frustrated that we weren't able to get information from the Board of Selectmen for technical reasons. So it was both the time frame and the lack of information that made us feel that we were operating in a vacuum. The member voting in favor felt that these issues were outweighed by the fact that Sewataro is a massive property and the town should have control over its use. Acquisition of this property will help maintain the character of the town.
Thank you. And is anyone from the Land Acquisition Review Committee here who would like to report out on their position? Thanks. Yes, Mr. Morley.
Christopher Morley, 321 Old Lancaster Road. Our committee actually has no chair, but I'm near a Boy Scout, so I'll go for it. So I don't have any pre-planned comments, except that the committee voted no with one abstention, which was the planning board member who felt that they should wait to see what the planning board voted. This was also before the Land Acquisition Review Committee a year and a half to 2 years ago, and they voted no with only one person voting yes, which was myself. I changed my vote. There were a number of things discussed, most of which have already been mentioned by the other no voters. I do think that the extremely large acquisition cost is a big part of it, along with all the other things mentioned. And I do want to say that people who estimate that their houses will be built and sold in these years for $1.1 billion in that location are way low. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. And the last committee that I understand took an official position is the Council on Aging, and then I'll get to the Planning Board does have one. Okay. Someone from the Council on Aging here who would like to speak for it? Yes, in the back, sir.
I'm moving up here a little bit closer. I was trying to remember the last time.
Could I have your name, please? Thank you.
John Mueller, 57 Wagon Wheel Road. I was trying to remember the last time I had addressed a group of this size, and I think this is it. So I had some things to say, and I changed it listening to what was happening.
Could I hear the Council on Aging's position, and then I'd be happy to recognize you during general debate if you have some personal opinions about it?
I understand.
Great, thanks.
Okay, not a problem. I'm getting ahead of myself. The Council of Aging met yesterday before the meeting, the town meeting, that is. The Council on Aging wants to clarify that the COA has taken no position on this camp. We look forward to additional planning and collaboration around all the town's future needs, including a community center. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Garvin for the Planning Board.
So the planning board voted last evening 5-0 in favor of controlling the land. That does not take into effect, the planning board did not take into perspective the financial aspects of this acquisition. There's been a lot of great discussion about that from town manager and the finance committee. We didn't look into that or how much toilet paper would need to be used or anything to that effect. What we did say as a planning board is we always feel the opportunity to control land is really what this town should be doing from a planning perspective. We believe that it is a very fortuitous time with the master plan about to be undertaken to take a pause, perhaps look into aspects to hold the land for a few years, understand what needs the town has overall as a master planning process, and then determine what to do with the control of this land. There are a number of things that could happen at that point in time that would come back before town meeting to be voted on. We think that is the best from a planning perspective.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other town committees that have taken a position on this article that would like to report out that I've missed? I don't see any committees. So I will open it to general discussion. But here, I just want to say one thing about how I'm going to do it so that I make sure I'm fair to everyone geographically. I'm going to kind of work my way around the room and then repeat that process. And so I'll just arbitrarily start sort of left, front, center, back, do the balcony, come back down, maybe zigzag, I don't know. But I want to make sure I'm not missing pockets because it is hard to always see. So I think I will start in the front quadrant, and I'll start in the second row. The gentleman, yes. Oh, Mr. Taylor, I didn't recognize you. Yes. And if anyone who is close to the podium wants to come to the podium, that's available for anyone who would like to use it.
Mark Taylor, 5 Liberty Ledge. I'm one of the owners of Camp Seawataro. When I first thought about approaching the town 3 years ago to see if there's any interest in buying Seawataro, the first thing that came to mind was whether or not I was going to end up in this spot right here. I'd like to address some of the issues and concerns that have led to confusion about the town's possible purchase of Seawataro. First off, the Taylors are leveraging the town to buy Seawataro. That is not the case. We have simply asked if the town is interested in buying it. It's simply a question. The sale of the land is the next step for us, and we feel the town is our choice in this process, our first choice in the process. It's simply a question. There's no leverage going on here. Secondly, there hasn't been enough time has been a concern. 5 years ago, the Taylors realized the dilemma that we were facing, that we would someday age out. We planned for a lot of things. We didn't plan for this one. We formed an advisory committee, a group of people to help us, professionals to look at options. We did a feasibility study to see if we perhaps could start a nonprofit and with help from some of our parents, somehow make a purchase of the camp. It turned out that was not possible. I approached Park and Rec 3 years ago, had them up for a site walk to see if there was any interest in a purchase. At that time, they seemed quite interested. We then considered trying to find a small school to perhaps purchase the property. It seemed like an ideal scenario. They would use it for 9 months of the year. We would use it for 3 months of the year. It seemed ideal. But the cost of the land was too great. There was no way a small school could swing that kind of purchase. 2 years ago, I had about a dozen town officials out for a site walk, again, inquiring if there was any interest in the property. In November of 2017, I went before the CPC, inquiring if the town was interested in buying our development rights. A determination was made that there was a problem with my application. I was asked to withdraw my application, which I did. In October of 2018, I went to the town manager and told her that we had decided to sell. And if the town was interested, this would be their last chance. Throughout all of this, our parents have received different communications indicating we were looking for ways to preserve Seawataro. A change was coming. I think there was even an article in the Town Crier. There's been ample opportunity for the town to begin a discussion. We have made it known for some time that a change was coming. Next up, there's another camp buyer. There is not. All the other camp bidders have received letters informing them that their offers were not accepted. We chose the town because we feel it is the best candidate for the following three reasons. Their vision for the property outlined in their letter of intent. Two, their offering price and their financial capability to support the debt. A concern we had was the outstanding debt loan to a potential bidder, if it was so great that foreclosure was possible, resulting in the property being developed. That was a concern of ours. And number three, the last condition was the town's experience. They have experience in running a camp. None of the other camp bidders had all three qualities, which is why we chose the town. And the other idea was that if the town should completely fail in their efforts to run a camp, it remains a park. Number four, if the town does not buy the property, will the property be developed? The answer is yes, the property will be developed. The town is our first choice, but if the town should decide not to buy the property, we want to decide, as the planning board wants to decide, we want to decide what happens to that property. I've received offers from developers and will begin negotiating those agreements if either tonight's vote or the vote on June 4th fails. It sounds like it's a threat, but it's not a threat. It's simply the reality. That's all I'm saying. It's simply our reality. Finally, our efforts over the past 3 weeks have been to get you here to show up here, to have your vote count. Many decisions are often made at town meeting by a small number of people that show up but have an enormous impact on the town. We don't want this to be one of those decisions. I'd like to thank, we hope for your support on this, and I also want to thank you for coming tonight. Thank you.
Thanks. No applause. Excuse me. No, order, please. I did not repeat what I said. Excuse me. No clapping, no audible reactions. I forgot to say that part ahead of this segment of town meeting. I gave a pretty stern talk about that last night, but absolutely no reactions of that sort, or debate will be over. And I'm going to now move to the back quadrant of the left side as I see it. Is anyone in that section wanting to speak? I see a card. Yes, that gentleman in the blue jacket. Thank you.
Hi, Adam Stone, 36 Thunder Road. This is for the town manager. As the CEO of the town, if we acquired Suotaro, is the only option to put Parks and Rec Commission in charge of it, or could we hire someone experienced to report directly to the town manager?
Ms. Rodriguez.
Madam Moderator, one option would be to open a new division that would just run this camp. Probably would require a whole new staff anyway. We only have 4 full-time employees at Park and Rec. They have 4 full-time employees now at Camp Suotaro, so it certainly would be an entire new division.
Okay, thank you. I'll move up to the balcony. This side of the balcony, anyone wish to speak? Yes, I see a card. There's a microphone right there.
Colin Anderson, 63 Wake Robin Road. I see our vote tonight as being, I'm a yes vote, I should say in advance. I see our vote tonight as being not between yes and no, but between maybe and no. If we decide no, it's off for good. And if we decide maybe, means we get to go to the annual townwide vote, by which time I hope there'll be a lot more data. The second point I'd like to make is I think many comments have been made tonight that point out there's a lot of misinformation, there's a lot of data that people would like to have that they don't yet have. And I would hope that if we have a yes vote tonight, between now and the townwide vote, we would be able to answer many of these questions and have a lot more clarity about who would run the camp, if it's run, et cetera. So I'm a yes vote.
Okay, thank you. And I'll move to the middle of the balcony. Would anyone in the middle section like to say anything at this time? I don't see anyone, so I'll move down to the middle section of the auditorium. And I will count you as the middle for now. Thanks. If you could, oh, I'm sorry, yes, a scout mic will come your way.
Chris Thompson, 178 Horse Pond Road. I'll just say that I agree with the Parks and Recreation. Was it the Parks Commission?
It's the Parks and Recreation Commission.
That we should buy the land but not be too hasty to get into the camp business, so to say.
That was the... who said that?
Planning Board.
Was the Planning Board.
I would agree with the Planning Board that we should buy the land and either preserve it as open space or explore options. But I have the question, which is, if we have a Community Preservation Act and we have a fund that has $3.3 million of unreserved cash sitting in it, why are we overriding for the full $11.3 million?
Okay. Would the town manager like to take that or the CPC? I don't know. You can fight about it.
Right. I'm not sure if the CPC chair is here, Madam Moderator. I don't see her yet.
Sherry, I'm missing you. Would you like to address that?
You want me to address it? Sure.
Okay.
So there was several kind of moving parts to this. One was timing. So CPC had already allotted their funds for this year. By the time we had made our offer and the RFP process had opened and finished. Two, CPC really does not have a lot of capacity for projects right now. If you remember when we did Broadacre back at October Town Meeting, we were only able to fund a portion of Broadacre with CPC because they did not feel they had adequate capacity at that point. So they would not have adequate capacity to make this purchase as well. I don't know, Madam Moderator, if there's anything else that the Chair would like to add.
Okay. That's all. Okay. I'm going to now move to the top right of the balcony. I see a card, yes? And a microphone is coming your way.
Nicole Ahern, 149 Pantry Road. So all with the North Quarry now being approved and we're going to have building there, if Suitaro is developed, my kids go to Haines. I'm sure a lot of people here's kids go to Haines. What's going to happen to Haines if now we develop North Quarry and then develop Suitaro? Like, is there going to be a plan for another school, elementary school, to accommodate all these kids? Because, you know, one of the reasons we moved to Sudbury and pay all these taxes so that my kids get a great education and don't have 30 kids in their class.
I can see if the superintendent of Sudbury Schools has anything, or the town manager.
Mr. Thompson, if you could bring up slide 40. So currently, and he's bringing it up now, but I will start to talk about it, our total elementary school capacity is 1,958. Our total enrollment as of the capacity study that we did back in November was 1,710. So there is some capacity, but at Haines, which was built for 432 students, post-quarry north development projections would be 404 students. So it would depend on the number of students that came out of this development. But we had 404 students with the Quarry North development. And I don't know if the superintendent has anything further he wants to add, but that's the capacity numbers right now.
Superintendent? Oh, hang on a second. The superintendent was asked a question. Do you have anything to add?
Depending on the number of students that we get and the timing of the students between the two developments, we can use a lot of different tools to mitigate the class size question. Those might be volunteer transfers. They might be targeted assignment for particular neighborhoods. Obviously, we could do staffing adjustments. Sort of less desirable things might be displacing programs, creating buffer zones for school assignments and redistricting.
Okay, thank you. Yes, and now moving to the front quadrant. Mr. Stein, I see you with your hand up. I will recognize you next. Would you like to use the podium? Okay.
Good evening. Bob Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. I want to start off by saying Camp Suetaro is a beautiful piece of land tucked away off the beaten track. If I was in a butter, I would love for it to be maintained as open land. If I had a child who went to the camp or was planning to go to it, I would love for it to be maintained. Now that I got that off my chest, I want to now give you the facts. These are irrefutable facts. Landvest did a complete extensive analysis of the 44 acres, over 100 pages of data. It is on the town's website. Do you know what Landvest, the experts on the property value, say? The town is substantially, dramatically overpaying for the property. As an open space or as a camp, they value this property at $5.5 million, not $11.25 million. If sold as a 31-home subdivision, they value it as at $10,370,000, not the $11.25 million we are paying. Now let's talk about the cost. The $11,269,700, which is before interest. So let's say $16 million total purchase price, including the interest. That comes out to $4,000 per average homeowner pre-tax over the 20 years. Now we have to add the maintenance costs, which the town estimates about $150,000. So it's probably going to be well over $150,000. Since we are buying the property, the 25 buildings will have to be ADA compliant, which is the American Disabilities Act, which could cost additionally in the millions of dollars. So be prepared every year for an override request to maintain this property because we just don't have the funds. This is not buy now and have no more expenses. So let's get back to what the experts have said about Camp Suetaro. The Land Acquisition Review Committee of Sudbury, 6 members, 4 appointed by the selectmen, 1 from the planning board and 1 from the conservation. You know what they voted? Not one member voted in favor of buying Suetaro. The Land Acquisition Committee, the Finance Committee, they voted overwhelmingly not to buy Suetaro. The Park and Rec Committee, they would be the one committee who you would think would love it. Nope. They voted overwhelmingly not to buy it. The Board of Selectmen, 2 of the members voted not to buy it. As you heard, the Capital Investment Advisory Committee, overwhelmingly not to buy it. But I do have great news. In the audience tonight, we have a family who has
offered to... Mr. Stein, you may not make that sort of remark that we're not talking about other people in that manner. You may stick to your facts that you've been enumerating.
I was given permission by that family.
Well, they have the right to speak for themselves. You speak for yourself and no one else. And if you continue in this line, I'll ask you to sit down. So please proceed to something that has been factual other than what you're going to say. No personal... Nothing about other people.
Well, they have public.
Nothing about other people, Mr. Stein. We are not having this conversation.
Okay.
Thank you.
So as I promised you, the irrefutable facts are Landvest, the experts in valuing property, say we are dramatically overpaying for it. Land Acquisition Review Committee, don't buy. FinCom, don't buy. Park and Rec, don't buy. Capital Advisory Committee, don't buy. So I would say, in summary, since I'm not allowed to tell you the facts, take the emotions out of this transaction, listen to the experts, vote no tonight.
Thank you for your comments. I'll now return to this side of the room. I see Mr. Gossels.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I'm going to say the opposite of what you guys have been hearing. So I'm Jonathan Gossels, 11 Spiller Circle. The trouble with open space is once it's developed into 33 houses, you never get it back. We don't have a lot of big parcels left in town, and whether we're overpaying a little bit over 100 years from now, whether it's $5 million or $10 million or $11 million, you can't undo 33 houses. That if we want to preserve open space in town, we have to preserve open space in town. It's a matter of priority, and whether we negotiate a slightly different price or I don't know, but once it's turned into 33 houses or 31 houses, you can't undo that. So Siwa Tara is beautiful property. And once it's turned into a bunch of McMansions, that's all there is to it. It'll never be open space. It'll never be preserved for, you know, our heritage. If we preserve it, we'll have it for hundreds of years. If it turns into houses, it's just the way it's going to be. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I'll work my way back. Yes, ma'am, right there, yep. And then I'll go to the balcony next.
Joyce Fantasia, 15 Willow Grant Road. There are two parts to this issue as far as I'm concerned. There's no doubt that Siwa Tara is an amazing piece of property. For the town to own it as a park or as a camp would be a benefit that we would all enjoy. It's been run as a park, as a camp successfully for 65 years. Even if it needs upgrades or whatever, it just seems to me that it can't all of a sudden be untenable as a camp. And that in itself has been an asset that so many people have enjoyed. The other issue is the location. In North Sudbury, we have Quarry North coming up. It's going to significantly increase the density in North Sudbury traffic on 117, all of the issues that we've already talked about, and that's a reality. If we have 33 more houses and more children, that adds again to the traffic, possibly who knows how many children will move in there, possibly a new school, and we have, as the previous gentleman mentioned, 33 or 31 new McMansions, which on the whole does not add a significant benefit to the town. I think it would be a shame to lose this parcel. The option for the Taylors is to sell it, obviously, for the value in its development rights. So it doesn't seem like an unreasonable amount of money, $11 million to develop the 31 house lots. He will get that. He will get that. And over a 20-year or 30-year payback, it just seems like it would be a shame to lose that property that everybody could enjoy.
Okay. Thank you. I'll move to the balcony area. Yes, sir. Front area there in the balcony.
Hi. Nick Pernice, 255 Peckham Road. Last night we heard a little bit about the fact that we don't have enough sidewalks. And I just want to add that in because it was really important to me. I thought about it, and I said, you know, that's right. I live on Peckham Road, and there are sections where I ride my bike. I feel like I'm going to get killed every other day by the traffic, which is faster and faster and bigger cars.
Could I ask you to stand up, please?
Oh, yeah,
thanks.
Sure.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, thank you. So anyways, I feel like there's a severe lack of recreation in this town. We have a lot more people than when I grew up here, a lot more kids. I see people, you can't get a parking place at Walden Pond anymore in the summer, unless you're happen to be lucky enough to be a member of SS&T. Trying to go someplace to go swimming, maybe Kachituate. You know, good luck if you're trying to go to Cranes Beach. I feel like this town, there's so much open space we've lost over the years since I grew up here. And I was so lucky to have grown up in a place where I had a lot of woods and a lot of open spaces to roam. I grew up on Goodman Hill, and I could walk for miles, well, it seemed like miles at the time back there, but you can't even do that anymore. I would love to see us purchase this property. But I also want to know if there's any way that if we do purchase this property, if people are really afraid of the debt, whether we could develop just a small portion of it to offset some of the debt, or is it an all or nothing?
Okay, I'll ask for a response from the town manager if that's anything that has been discussed by the town.
Madam Moderator, that has not yet been discussed by the Board of Selectmen or any other committees. It will be something that would have to come back before this group. The property would have to be surplus and then go through a RFP process.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, anyone else in the balcony? I see center of the balcony. And I'll just point out, I've been hearing a lot of comments on the pro side, which is just sort of how it's been happening. So I'll take a few more comments in my geographic way, but then what I may do is see if there are some folks that have other things. I know Selectman Simon is waiting to speak. So I just want to make sure that we hear fully from people on both sides. So I know I said I would acknowledge someone else in the balcony, and I've lost the card. Okay, yes, in the center there. Yep.
Hi, my name is Nalini Luthra. Full disclosure, I am a yes. And
could I have your address, please?
941 Concord Road.
Thank you.
And I'm a parent at Haynes. So having said that, I am just going, I did not come here planning to speak, but having heard a lot of conversation, what I think is we don't have enough information is what a lot of people are saying, including some of the people that presented. And I just feel like we have a month almost to get that information. And I love the idea of the gentleman who said it's a maybe or a no, because a maybe is, you know, for the people who are on the fence some time to go and get that information and present it to themselves. And I just feel like I would like to encourage the maybes to be a maybe and not a no. Coming down to the school situation, I feel I've lived in this town from 88 to 99 and then 2012 to now, and I just feel like thing gets divided between North and South and Haynes and Nixon. And I just feel at the end of the day, whatever happens to the school, it impacts Curtis and it impacts the high school. So we are all one at the end of the day. And I just want us to vote as one unified community. That's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. I think I will acknowledge Selectman Simon now, and then I'll continue to work back in this way. And I see Mr. LaFerrera has been eager to speak as well. So, and then we'll see where we are.
Good evening. My name is Len Simon, a member of the Board of Selectmen, 40 Meadowbrook Circle. There are three questions about the purchase of Sewataro. First, does Sudbury need the land? Second, what are the costs? In regard to the cost, there are three parts to the cost. One is, are we paying the right amount? Second, what will the cost be over the years? The cost of ownership? And finally, what is the competition for capital for other projects in town? Does Sudbury need the land? There's been discussion about, well, land's been, you know, we don't have enough here. Let me give you a capsule of what we have. The town owns 12 parcels, 675 acres. The state, two large parcels, a forest and a wildlife management area. Sudbury Valley Trustees, six properties, totaling almost 800 acres. Federal land, there are two wildlife management areas, over 6,000 acres. The total acreage in Sudbury of open space, recreation, conservation land is over 8,000 acres. That's over 12 and a half square miles. That's virtually half of Sudbury is open space and recreation. Plus, there are 10 miles of trails on the two abandoned rail corridors. And as far as recreational facilities and fields, over 14 facilities and fields for baseball, soccer, basketball, swimming, football, lacrosse, softball, field hockey, volleyball, tennis, pickleball, and fishing. In summary or conclusion, Sudbury has abundant open space and recreation and does not need Seward Taro. What are the costs? There's the cost of which the first cost is the purchase price. The appraisal by our appraiser is $10,370,000. The appraisal for use as open space is less than half of that, about $5 million, which would mean we would be paying $6 million more for this land than for which it is appraised. The town manager mentioned, well, if somebody offered you less for your house, you wouldn't take it. This is the opposite. This is the land we're using it for open space and recreation, but we're paying top dollar, in fact, $1 million over top dollar, which is for single family homes. To pay this amount will be a gross overpayment for Seward Taro. As far as the cost of ownership, principal and interest is over $16 million. Insurance and maintenance, $4.8 million. And also, we should consider the $200,000 per year in lost real estate tax. The total cost of ownership, the total partial cost of ownership over 20 years will be over $27 million. This comes out to almost $1.4 million a year for 20 years. The town manager has spoken about options. Maybe, but we don't actually have a plan. In order to make a purchase of this magnitude, the town would need to have the financial data to make an informed decision about buying the land and coming up with a realistic cost recovery plan. We don't have that now. In addition, the cost to really understand the value of the land or what we could do would require commissioning a study to make it ADA compliant, and then carrying out the plan, which would be another couple of million dollars at least. Also, there's no plan as to how to pay for the insurance, maintenance, and lost real estate. There are other solutions that will save the town millions of dollars. It would pay the annual real estate taxes. It would avoid the expenditure of over $11 million in our capital. With a capital override, it would remove the risk of buying a business that could end up costing the town many thousands of dollars for many years. And the town has had some difficulty even running the pool and maintaining that. We don't have a great track record for maintaining our capital. And without question, this would be a large piece of capital.
Mr. Simon, that's your timer.
Yeah, if I could have 2 minutes, please.
Excuse me. No, thank you. It's for me to talk about with Mr. Simon. You may wrap it up now in less than 1 minute, please.
Thank you. There's tremendous competition for capital. Over the next three fiscal years, we have over $14.5 million, not including the fire station or the Fairbank Community Center. There are options for using the land, but none in place. There's been no public discussion, no charrette, no town forum, no online survey.
Okay, that's, I think, the end of your time. Thank you, Mr. Simon. All right, in this corner, I see about half a dozen cards over on this side of the room, and I think I will recognize as many of you as have new information or new points to make. Mr. LaFerrera, you can go first, and then I'll see after you speak if there is still unanswered questions, of course, and then if there's a new point to be made, then that would be great. Otherwise, I think we're getting on toward being ready to vote.
Madam Moderator, Joe LaFerrera, 47 Windmill Drive, and I will keep it short and sweet. I think there is an important aspect of this that has been left out. Everybody's talking about the numbers and the tangibles. Your taxes will go up $168 a year. I think we need to give due deference to the intangibles. Think about when you moved into Sudbury. What do you think when you move into a town? You look at what the amenities are, what aspects of that town make it different, make it unique, make it attractive to you. And it seems to me that if we acquire Suitaro, what we acquire is enormous amounts of flexibility to do wonderful, wonderful things with this property that we will lose forever if we lose it. But if we keep it, that is the kind of thing that makes Sudbury a more attractive place. That is the kind of thing that makes your property values go up. That is the kind of thing that is going to make this town what encouraged you to move here to begin with. And so, again, I'm going to ask, we have a lot of people here, but we don't have nearly as much as the town has to offer. Give the rest of the town, those people who can't get babysitters, who couldn't be here tonight, give the rest of the town the opportunity to, A, get another month's worth of information, and, B, show up sometime during Election Day and vote on whether or not this is the kind of thing we want to do to add to what we are as a town. Thank you.
Okay. No clapping. Thank you. You can ask my children. I mean it when I give warnings. So I see three people in a row over here. I'm going to acknowledge the first one on the left. Yes, you who have the pink card up. Two doors, two people down. Yes, you. You may have a microphone and say something. Sorry, it's really unclear. And then I'm going to go back to this side of the room because I'm realizing there are some people over here who have, I think, been waiting. So, yes, ma'am. Sorry about that.
Samantha Truex, 101 Longfellow Road. I've heard a lot of discussion about the expected costs and unknown potential costs if we buy this land. I really haven't heard anything about unexpected or potential costs if we don't buy the land, and I have a hard time believing that's a zero. So could either the Board of Selectmen or the Finance Committee suggest, are you certain that we will not be asked to build roads or streetlights or any other capital projects or other expenses that will come along with the development?
Sure. Let's see. I think the town manager maybe would be the best person to address that in terms of what comes along with a new development. Is that sort of your general question? Expenses to the town from a new development? Okay.
So the difficult part about this analysis is that we don't know what the future development will look like, right? So we don't know if we have a developer who's going to be coming in and asking town meeting to accept streets, which we then will have to plow and maintain. We don't know if the potential developer may come in and need stormwater assistance or need help from the water division because there's not enough capacity. We don't have answers to those questions right now because we don't know what this development looks like, right? So the best that we can do is the slide that I showed earlier about the municipal expenses that we do know. And so we could look at the number of people we expect per home, and we can say that the effect that will have on the town budget is population-sensitive items, right? So police, fire, the library, things that we can tangibly hold on to right now. But because we don't know what this development will look like, we really cannot estimate what the cost of snow plowing or filling potholes, et cetera, would be.
Hang on one second, please. Wait for a microphone to ask a quick follow-up.
Is there any likelihood that it's zero? Because I have a hard time believing it's zero, and nobody's estimated it, but that doesn't mean it's zero.
I think it's an unknowable for the town, so we can leave it at that. On this side of the room, yes. Ms. Nam, you have your hand up.
Hi, Jean Nam, 81 Newbridge Road. I'm a member of the Finance Committee, but these are my own thoughts. So here we are, Suitaro. We've heard a lot about what could we do there. So let's talk about some more specific ideas about what we could do there. 44 beautiful acres. I think we've gone over that. I think it could really be an amazing community place, bring the community together. It could truly be multi-generational and definitely a family destination. And it could solve some of our ongoing issues. Let's face it, I don't think anyone in this room is going to deny that the seniors need more space. And I think it's also really hard to deny that Park and Rec wants more courts, they want more opportunities. So what if we did this? Boom, more space for the seniors and some new opportunities for Park and Rec. By moving part of Park and Rec and possibly the Sudbury School Administration to Sewataro, the Fairbank renovation can potentially have a reduced scope and cost. This is just a comparison of what Fairbank, which is the current location of Park and Rec, looks like, and what Sewataro looks like. It's a much, much better fit, I think, at Sewataro. It could be a park and recreation annex. Many activities could just be moved there. Terrific twos, preschool pals, they could finally play outside. Oh, my goodness. The teen center, summer swim lessons, in a pool where your kid can stand up and not be afraid of sinking. Many new activities could be added. Makerspace, workshop, gardening, kayaking. I could go on and on. It's just amazing the opportunities that could open up for us. There's plenty of indoor space, more than 17,000 square feet of indoor winterized space, and obviously picturesque outdoor spaces. What future capital projections can be reduced if we purchase Sewataro? Well, later tonight, you'll be asked to spend $220,000 on tennis courts and basketball courts already at Sewataro. You'll be asked in the five-year capital plan that has become a very popular document these days, there's $250,000 for a spray park. There are 2 to 3 sprinkler areas at Sewataro right now. And then there's the big Fairbank Community Center. It's hard to keep track, but approximately the latest proposal on the table there is $25 million for 3 user groups, seniors, Park and Rec, and SPS administration. If Park and Rec and or SPS administration moved up to Sewataro, then the scope of that project could be reduced significantly, by half, maybe by more. Sorry, I should say that would... It could be $10 million that we're saving in future projections. And then let's talk about revenue. This could be an amazing park for all of Sudbury. We don't have that. Everyone's talked about SSNT and all those things. We could be like other towns, like Wayland and Acton. $150, couple hundred dollars for residents, discounts for seniors and military, just a place for the community to get together. Corporate retreats, parties, campouts, these are real possibilities at this location. I wish I could use it next month for my son's birthday party. We could do a concession stand there. We could use the LS football stadium model, where nonprofits are given the opportunity to work it. So you save on labor, but maybe you split the profits, half the profits to the town, half the profits to the group. We could do partnerships. Waypoint Adventures is an amazing organization that offers accessible activities for kids with disabilities. They think the land is wonderful, and they could offer something like an accessible ropes course. And we could obviously expand our continuing education classes. There's I was personally attracted to the 6 pottery wheels and kilns there. There's an amazing art and craft center. It's endless, the possibilities. Now let's talk about some money. Accessibility grants. The Massachusetts Office of Disability offers a grant for up to $250,000 for capital improvements specifically to improving access to persons with disabilities. That grant is offered every year.
Okay, that's 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Rupini. Oh. Hang on. Ms. Nam, would you need more time?
I could do like 1 or 2 more minutes, yeah.
One more minute since I granted that to Mr. Simon. I'd be happy to give it to you.
We have to figure out what page we're on. Could you go to 12, maybe? I would help you, but I don't think I can help you. Oh, yeah, good. I'll do the next one. Other grant opportunities. The Cummings Foundation is an amazing group. They give out grants. The Sudbury Foundation is local. They do a lot of pilot programs for the schools. And then there are just our town funds, again mentioned before, $400,000 sitting in a bank for when we sold the police station, $1 million sitting in a bank for the Malone Stabilization Fund, $2.4 million sitting in the bank of Community Preservation Act money. What new opportunities does it bring to our town? Outdoor learning, experiential learning, vocational partnerships, all kinds of things that we could do. Maybe even one of the houses could become part of our affordable housing inventory. Maybe we could put up some solar farms. Maybe we could bring back Sudbury.
Okay,
Day. That's
been about a minute. Sorry. Okay. Thanks.
That's the end. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. So at this point, I'm going to see if, again, is there anyone with, I am getting a big look of concern from Mr. Began. Okay. I'm going to acknowledge the fact that he's the Park and Rec Commission Chair and Committee Chair. Commission?
Robert Began, Park and Rec Commission. I just want to clarify one thing that actually I'd already talked to Gene about because it's coming up, and that's the two tennis courts that you will be voting on later. The two tennis courts at Suitaro do not address our need. Those two tennis courts were supposed to replace what was already removed at Featherland, and the purpose of that was to help the LS program. So then, what do you call it? Those two tennis courts at Suitaro just don't meet the needs. I just want to clarify that.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. All right, so anyone with new information or a new question? Sorry. There's a gentleman in an aqua shirt who has caught my eye now because he's been waving his arm very vigorously.
Raymond Schmidt-Ross, 298 Bay, now Grode. So, a couple of things. One, beautiful property. There's no question that the land is beautiful. There's no question that it's well worth preserving. The land that was sold off the original property was also well worth preserving. It was sold. It was developed. We could take that all the way back to... How far back do you want to go? Maybe... We can all, most of us, almost all of us, if not all of us, move back to where we all came from, and the land will all be undeveloped and very beautiful. I don't know that that is the entirety of the argument. Some of this addresses wants and needs. Some of this needs to address affordability. Can we afford this? Every day, all kinds of people that I talk to all over town talk about, we're here because of the education system. As soon as our kids are done with school, we're gone. We're not going to keep on paying these taxes. Our taxes have increased over the past 5 years. I just calculated it this week. 17.5% over 5 years. Looking at all the planned and known plans, and taking this into account over the upcoming 5 years, we're looking at 20 to 25%. That's not taking into account unknowns. That's over 40% over the course of under 10 years. I'm hard-pressed to find any other town in Massachusetts that's increased taxes at that rate in that time period. At this rate, the way we're going, we're going to have a beautiful town, lots of town-owned property, and so many people, so much negative migration, that there'll be no one to pay taxes to maintain it.
Okay.
So where do we want to go with this? These are the things that I think we need to be considering here, along with the fact that, yes, this is a wonderful property and a beautiful property, but we need to be adult. We need to be fiscally responsible. We need to be aware of all the other commitments that we are have taken on and are taking on and should expect to take on. Thank you.
Okay, 1 second. We didn't quite get your name at the beginning, your name and address.
Raymond Schmidt-Gross, 298 Maynard Road.
Okay. And Ms. Rupinian has been very patient in the front.
Kirsten Rupinian, 45 Harness Lane. I prefer to face you guys tonight. I've been here in town for 28 years, and I have voted for every single open space purchase that's ever been before the town. And further, I have worked on every single open space purchase, with the exception of Broadacres, and trying to bring the town around to buying these parcels. We have some beautiful parcels that we've purchased. They represent scenic vistas. They represent our sense of place and who we are as a community. When you drive home from work, you see Carol Wolf's property, you see the Meachin property, you see the Johnson property, and other properties that we've purchased over the years that help us sort of get to our sense when we get here. We have beautiful open spaces. So this has been very difficult for me tonight and in the past few weeks trying to figure out what side of Suitaro that I was going to fall onto. And I understand the selectmen's role. I understand the board and committee's roles in determining whether or not this is a good purchase, but this is a very hard ask. Suitaro is very different. It is not open space the way we have appreciated open space. It has buildings and houses on it, which makes it very different. There are a lot of unknowns relative to those open spaces. If we could paint a picture the way the speaker before me painted a beautiful fairy tale picture of Suitaro becoming one of the town's best assets, I would vote for it in a second. But then we have Fairbank, and you don't just leave Fairbank to turn into the gas station on Route 20, deserted, full of weeds, and nobody's paying attention to it. So we can't ignore what's in front of us. We can't ignore what we're faced with. And also, the concerns that I'm having is, and I reflect a lot of people's discussions tonight, if a developer came to bid on Suitaro, that developer could never bid the $11 million. This is a pure numbers thing. They couldn't bid that because then you'd have to sell the houses for $2.2 million in order to make money back. A developer is there, make no mistake, to make money. They are going to want the towns to take over the streets. They are going to want the municipal benefits that all developers have relative to a development. We have a plan that's expired. We have septic that's expired. We have an open space plan that's expired, which releases us from any state funding ability until that open space plan is redone. It's expired. We don't have any state funding available to us. In addition, I'd like to know from either the Board of Selectmen, the town manager, or whomever, whether a developer actually ever made an offer, if they're allowed to even tell us that. And also, is there any new data that is coming available that is going to help people in a month either change their minds or make up their minds? Because I feel like from today, I haven't heard anything new. I'm still confused as far as the numbers. Things have not added up. And when they don't add up, I can't vote for it. I cannot vote to have public land be privately run by a camp or anybody else. And so, unfortunately, tonight, I'm not going to be voting yes for Suitaro. I'm sorry, but that's kind of the way I feel, and I hope that you all take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Question, Madam Moderator.
Yes, sir. I hear that. Yes, I do. So can I take it as a motion in the due course? So your name, please.
Donald Oasis, Willis Road.
And your motion is to call the question.
Yes, ma'am.
I will accept that as a properly made motion. All in favor of the – and so that this – I just want to explain it to people who weren't here last night. A motion to move the question means we vote on whether or not to proceed with any further debate. So if this passes, which has to be by two-thirds, then we will proceed directly to a vote with no further discussion. So all who are ready to basically stop discussing and move to a vote needs to be
Yes, what's your question? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was just more of a rhetorical question. The speaker is informing me that those were rhetorical points, so thank you for asking. I appreciate it. Oh, you're not informing me of that. You would like answers. I apologize, Ms. Rupinian. I misunderstood your head nod. So, Town Manager Rodriguez, and then we'll proceed to the call of the question.
Sure. So, Madam Moderator, over the next 30 days, my plan would be, and I'm sure the board will be discussing it at their meeting on Tuesday night, to begin to do a request for information, so not go out to bid and do an RFP process, but to start inquiring of businesses and camp operators if there's interest in actually running the camp in the summer of 2020. I think it's important for us to start to gather that information. I would suggest to the board that we do a flash vote survey. For those of you that aren't familiar with that, it's a 48-hour survey that you can do on your phone or your computer that lets us gather information from all of you about what people want to see, and it's been a really useful tool for us. So that's something that I would suggest. And then I'll have office hours. I'm sure the board will have office hours, and we'll continue this conversation and try to answer as many questions as possible. A lot of people have emailed me with questions. A lot of people have not. If you have questions, I answer email all the time, as many of you would tell me. And I'm happy to answer any questions individually as well, or come see me. I'm happy to do that too. But we will continue to gather information, continue to get information out to all of you as you make your decisions moving forward. And I don't remember what Mr. Pinion's second question was. I apologize. Oh, and I can't answer the question about the developer. It was a closed bid process. I have no information about the other bids except what we've all learned.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, so we're now going to vote on whether to terminate debate and move on to the vote. So all in favor of calling the question, please indicate by raising your hands. It has to be two-thirds. Okay, all opposed? That passes by well more than two-thirds. So before we actually vote, I have a couple of things I need to say. First, I want to invite the election workers from the lobby to all come in. And once they do so, we'll be all set. That's good. And then the second thing, the town clerk has asked me to remind folks that the town election on June 4th will occur no matter what happens tonight. It cannot be canceled in the event that this fails. It has to go on, so just be aware of that. So, and the reason I'm saying that now is that what I anticipate is that a few people might choose to leave after this vote. So one request, if you are going to leave, please do so as quietly as you can. I think that was all I wanted to say. So, because we're going to continue on. It's only 10 o'clock, so we will go until 10:30 or later if the hall chooses to go later than that. So, Mr. Surratt has a question.
Would the moderator remind the hall that in the event this is close, there's a likelihood of a count and people shouldn't run away before a count occurs?
Sure. Yes. And as I have said in my opening remarks at the beginning of town meeting, I will absolutely call for a counted vote if it is not clearly two-thirds to me. So I will be assessing this extremely carefully. So if it's anything other than a very obvious two-thirds, I will call for a counted vote tonight. And so you should stay in place until I have announced my decision. So now we will proceed to the vote. So as I said, the quantum required for this is two-thirds to pass. So all in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by more than two-thirds. Okay, now, please, no, we're going to continue with the meeting. So if you need to leave, please do so quietly. All right, moving on. That's not particularly quiet. I'll give you 10 seconds to get quiet. I'll keep doing that. Thanks. Could you all just please just be quiet and quick. Thanks. And I'm going to move right along. We are going to Article 26, amend Article 25, capital planning. And I'll recognize Selectman Cardi. Excuse me. please be quiet out of respect for the rest of town meeting that is going to continue now? Thank you so much. Okay, Selectman Carty.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Move in the words of the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. And Mr. Carty, for your presentation.
Sure. Thank you. My name is Dan Carty, member of the Board of Selectmen. I'm the outgoing chair of the former Strategic Financial Planning Committee for Capital Planning. One of the outcomes of that committee was a recommendation to the Board of Selectmen that we continue to fine-tune our capital planning article, otherwise known as article, our bylaw number 25. So next slide. So we actually hope that this is really just a little bit of housekeeping. I think it was last year we fine-tuned this a little bit and raised it from, it used to be $50,000 in 1 year or $100,000 over multiple years. Projects falling into that category should be reviewed by the CIAC. And if you recall, we raised that to $100,000 in a single year and $200,000 over multiple years. But one of the things we realized, if you look right at the top two lines of this, is projects that are brought forward by the Sudbury Town Manager, Sudbury Public Schools, and Lincoln Sudbury Regional Schools were the ones that were really to be reviewed by the CIAC, and we really realized that left a couple of loopholes. One was a citizen petition article, certainly, but another one is an article brought forward by us, the Board of Selectmen, didn't have to go through the CIAC process. So we didn't think that was right. Our Capital Committee recommended it to the Board of Selectmen to make the change, if you want to advance, please. And the change simply just takes the categories or the petitioners out of the mix and says all capital projects going forward should be subject to review by the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. So we hope that you will support this change to our bylaw.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a position?
Finance Committee recommends changing the bylaw, Article 26.
Great. And the Board of Selectmen, Mr. Carty?
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Great. And I will now open the floor for discussion. Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 26? Okay. I see no one. The quantum for this is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Thank you. Article 27, Raymond Road Conveyance to Water District. A motion by Selectwoman Drettler.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. And I'll recognize Town Manager Rodriguez for the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. A little bit about the history of the parcel that we are asking to transfer to the Water District. It's 8.9 acres of land. The town owns lot 0009, 0010, and 0013. We purchased them around 1961. We paid $150,000 for 150 approximate acres. Prior to the mid-1960s, it was actually farmland. It's a very swampy land, difficult to get to. It's grown in with invasive buckthorn. At the time, the Water District has a well on 9. I don't know if I said that. I'm sorry. At the time of acquisition, it appeared that Lot 10 was going to be used for horse rinks and other passive recreation like nature trails due to its wet nature. Tonight, we're asking to convey Lot 10 to the Water District. The Water District is conveying a property they own at the North Road parcel, and this land, which is more suitable for the Water District, will help to make certain that the Water District continues to have land in Sudbury for water preservation and protection. And this land we do not need, and we'd like to transfer it to them. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
And the Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen support Article 27.
Okay. Would anyone like to be heard under Article 27? Yes, sir.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I'd like to understand what you just said about
sure.
what about what the Water District is going to use this for.
It's just going to be preservation. They may, and the Water District is here tonight, and I'm sure they'd be happy to opine further. It may be a suitable spot for them to use for a future well.
And that seems to be ideal for them. They approached us about this spot as something that was very attractive for them, both for the preservation purpose, but as well as the future water needs of the town.
Great. Thank you. All the way in the back, Ms. Hollinger. Oh, you need a mic. Oh, and mine got really loud.
Siobhan Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. I'm a little bit confused because we just passed Article 23 where the Water District has an interest in this wastewater management impact report, and now we're going to convey to them for no fee property that we own. And the Water District isn't going to contribute to the impact report? Is that... Do I have that right?
Right. So we're trying to be partners with them as much as we can. This is a lot that we deemed that's not necessary for the town. It's not developable, and we have no use for it. And so we would like to give it to them so that we can make certain that we have safe drinking water moving forward.
So why wouldn't there have been an agreement to contribute to the impact report in exchange for this property?
So we... We'll, I'm sure, have discussions with them as the sewer and the impact project move forward. In most communities that have a water department that's internal, they run those departments through an enterprise fund, and the water sewer is actually together. It makes it much easier to do sewer projects. This is very unique, especially for me. I didn't come from a community that had this. We have started to have excellent conversations between the town and the water department district. We've been working together on a lot of projects and helping each other out, and the partnerships are growing, I think, between us. So I think you'll see us collaborating on many more projects in the future.
Right, but I'm specifically saying that we have this $500,000 impact report that the water district is a piece of, is a party of, that it was answered that they're not contributing anything to this. Okay. And now we're contributing land, conveying land over to them. I feel like there's a disconnect, and that before we were asked to vote in 23, maybe there should have been an agreement to in place for the exchange of the property on Raymond Road. They contribute something to the $500,000 impact report, which we just voted to raise our taxes for.
I appreciate that concern. I understand that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Anyone else? Yes, here in front. So if someone could just run a mic maybe around the front. Thank you, Mr. Pendleton.
Kathy Jacob, 3280 Lancaster Road. I am just curious, on the map, is the lower row of parcels butting up to Route 20?
I'm not qualified to answer that question. Does anyone know what that lower row of parcels is? Maybe Debbie? Not near Route 20 at all, right? Yeah.
That's Warren Road.
Warren Road, thank you. Yes.
Okay, great. Anyone else?
Thank you, Ms.
Yes, sir. And while the mic is getting passed, I just want to give a big shout-out to my assistant moderators tonight. They have been wonderfully helpful, even though their technical role was to moderate the overflow rooms. We didn't need them, and instead they have acted as ushers and a second set of eyes for me, and now they're running the mics, and I really, really, really appreciate it. So here's the exception to the clapping rule. So thank you to David Pendleton, Nell Forgas, and George Connor. All right. So thank you. Sorry. You may now proceed.
Chris Thompson, 178 Horse Pond Road. Just what's the difference between the town owning it as land and the water district owning it as land, as far as there's no tax revenue either way,
right. But
the water district runs under an enterprise fund or revolving, or has its own bank account, so to say. So could we sell this land to them because they're operating at a profit, and then that would reduce our tax liabilities?
Ms. Rodriguez.
Sure, Madam Moderator. So the Water District is its own entity. It was formed under special legislation to be separate from the town. We certainly could have talked about selling it to them. It doesn't have any real value to us. Looking at the value of the land, speaking with the Conservation Department, there's no value to this land for us, so I don't know what we really would sell it to them for. The more important thing for us was the preservation.
Okay, yes, over here.
Hi, my name is, you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my name is Bob Sheldon. I'm 60 Saxony Drive, and I'm a member of the Board of Water Commissioners. Just want to kind of square a few things away here. We would prefer to own land that we have wells on. We would prefer to own land that is immediately adjacent to our wells. As part of the whole process of the Quarry North purchase or articles, there's 3.2 acres of our land that's within Zone 2 that we have agreed to, or actually more than 3.2, a little bit, 3.7 acres, that we've agreed in principle to go to Quarry North. This was all part of this sort of complicated thing with Sudbury Station and Quarry North, and the Water District worked with the town to see if we were giving up something, what could we get in return, because we're giving up 3.7 acres next to well number 5, what could we get elsewhere in the town? And I know our Director of Operations, Vinnie Roy, and people from the Conservation Commission, Melissa, all kind of huddled together, looked at available properties, and this property is next to two of our vital wells, especially well number 4, which requires very little treatment, so preserving that property nearby is very useful. The other thing that we can do, it's very difficult, long process to construct a brand new well in a brand new site. But if we can do what's called a satellite well within 100 feet or so of the existing well, I think it's 200 feet, of the existing well, if there's a problem with that first well, we can construct another one and do it pretty efficiently. So owning that property is very good for our purposes and supplying water to the town. And as far as the CWMP, that's wastewater. I realize it does benefit us. But our business, our purpose is to supply drinking water, primarily for drinking and not too much for irrigation, to people throughout the service area, most of which is the town. And I hope that answers some of the questions.
Okay, thanks. Did you want to respond?
No, I was just going to say that we should have let him present it in the first place. He was much more eloquent than I was.
Oh, that's okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Schneller, I see your hand.
Bill Schinella, 37 Drummond Road. I guess a follow-up now that we've heard from the Water Commission. The parcel that I want to know whether the parcel that was contributed to the Quarry North deal by the Water District, whether the Water District received any cash for that or whether it was strictly a donation and this is a swap. And then the second part of the question is, would the Water District consider providing office space for town needs like SPS with their buildings?
Town manager.
So, Madam Moderator, they did receive a cash offer in their response to their RFP for their parcel that is next to the Malone parcel on North Road. It was a cash offer, but it also offered them a portion of the town center land, which was not attractive to them because it was not suitable for a well. And I believe the offer was $600,000. So he's saying $350,000. $300,000 for the purchase and $350,000 for water quality testing.
Okay, thank you. Yes, all the way in the back.
Thank you. Shirley Hittig, 54 Wake Robin Road. I'm a little confused. Town manager said that by conveying this land, part of the purpose or appreciation was that it would be preserved. But now we're being told that a well is going to be dug there, and that doesn't sound like preservation. I'm confused by the language.
Sure. If you could go to my second slide, what I was trying to say, and I think I may be getting tired now, is that it's for water preservation and protection. So we're trying to preserve the town's water sources by protecting the land around the wells.
Okay, great.
I'm sorry, I should have referred to you first.
Okay.
I apologize.
Yes, over there. Yes, Jill. Sorry. And then, I'm sorry, Ms. Deneen, I saw you down there. Oh.
Hi, Jill Falvey, 409 Dutton Road. I just, this is all a little confusing because you said that the land has no value to the town, Melissa, but yet it does have value. It has value to the Water Commission that really isn't part of the town, even though it says Sudbury, because of some pretense, mm-hmm. of which they said that they gave us land, but yet we gave them money for the Quarry North because we gave them $300,000. Did I miss that? I'm not getting what you did then. Yeah. Because to me, it's like...
Let me hang on a sec. If you have a really specific question, I want to make sure... We're all getting a little tired, and the specifics are getting a little muddy. So I want to just make sure we're all super clear on what we are, and then we're going to move to a vote because we have a lot of business
to
cover.
So my concern is that we're just giving away a piece of land, which we've always... And my concern is, what are the unintended consequences, because we've seen unintended consequences.
Okay, so that's fine. And I will leave it to Ms. Rodriguez to address that, unless she would like to defer to Mr. Sheldon.
If it doesn't, whatever you want, Mr. Sheldon is fine.
Okay, Mr. Sheldon.
Bob Sheldon, 60 Saxony Drive, Water Commissioner. As part of the overall Quarry North process, the town was doing its thing with Quarry North, and then we were also encouraged to put out a request for proposals to entities for the 3-point-plus acres of property that's immediately adjacent to the town's Malone property. So we put out that RFP. We had one respondent. It was Quarry North. And so that's what we're working with them. This is something that we're giving to or selling to Quarry North. But in exchange for that, we would like to have some other land next to another well because we're giving up some land here. So in exchange of this overall process, which originally had in it the Sudbury Station site and that there could be a well put at the Sudbury Station site, which is really infeasible. It's something that it won't work for us. So that's kind of how the three entities get together in all of this, the town, Quarry North, and us. And I hope that helps explain the confusion.
Okay. And Ms. Deneen, you said you had your card up.
Good evening, Debbie Deneen, Conservation Coordinator. I think we're talking here about municipal government ownership versus water district ownership. But in the end, it's all ownership of the land for our own good, the residents of town. Even though technically it's a different entity, the water district doesn't want that, you know, to fill their coffers with money and do development on it. They want it to develop a well for good potable water for everybody here. This is from our town GIS. And you can see the hatched areas and the different colors are wetlands. And you might notice on the right-hand side or the east side, there's a stream. Just off to the north, there's a major stream, Landham Brook. To the west side or the left side along Raymond Road, there's only 126 feet of frontage. It's not a developable parcel for any kind of sale for any residential development. This is something where if anybody wanted to get into the very limited dry area, which is that sort of darker white pine area, they would have to cross the three wetlands and develop something within the 200-foot riverfront area. At least two of those three wetlands are vernal pools. There is no way the Conservation Commission would ever give anyone a permit to cross that, except potentially for the water district. And the reason for that is of the eight interests of the Wetlands Protection Act, three of those interests are public water supply, private water supply, and groundwater supply. So this land going to the water district is really for the reason that properties are protected in their natural state for a water supply. It's a little bit of a catch-22. but they are the only ones who really could ever do anything with the land, and they would be doing something for it, you know, for our own benefit to make sure that we continue to have good quality water. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think we're ready to vote. The vote for this is needs to be a two-thirds vote. So all in favor, please indicate by raising your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than two-thirds. Article 28, amend zoning Malone Smart Growth Overlay District. I'll recognize Selectman Hardy for a motion. And if I have a request, so in order to keep going, we need to maintain a quorum, which is 100 people, which we comfortably have now, but if I can get the vast majority of you to stay, that would be fantastic. So thank you. Sorry, Selectman Hardy for the motion.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Great. And I'll recognize Ms. Rodriguez for a presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. This is a holdover from our special town meeting we had in December. We were not able to vote on that yet because we had not heard back from the state. Now we have. So Article 28 is the Smart Growth Overlay District. And just for edification, a zoning overlay is a zoning district which is applied over one of our established zoning districts. It usually has additional, different, or stricter standards and criteria for the covered properties. And a developer could choose to use either the overlaying district or the district underneath the overlaying district. We are going to be talking today about a 40R, which is a smart growth overlay district that is a state law. In 2004 and in 2010, the town actually discussed 40R in regards to Malone and a few other sites. And the development of a 40R is really a smart growth district. Typically, it's near transit, it's a concentrated development, or it's otherwise suitable. We have had this site deemed suitable by the Department of Housing and Community Development at the state. So the zoning overlay district under the Massachusetts Chapter General Law Chapter 40R applies to 5.95 acres only of the Malone property. The 101 40R units will fall under this. 25% of those units will be affordable, but all 101 will count toward the town's subsidizing housing inventory pending state approval. And I should say that currently the town's subsidized housing inventory, meaning that the amount of affordable housing we have in town is 11.21%. There are restrictions to make sure that the required number of units are affordable and stay affordable, and the use is limited to multifamily residential, parking, small commercial use, supplement that residential housing and accessory uses like a gym or a clubhouse for the people that actually are living there. There is design elements and procedural requirements, and we still require site plan review and approvals as well as public hearings, and the authority for those is the planning board. Chapter 40R of Massachusetts General Laws encourages cities and towns to establish these new overlay districts to promote housing production and more generally for smart growth development. Under the Chapter 40R, communities that adopt these special zoning districts allowing the as-of-right higher density residential development are provided with financial rewards. So if we pass this zoning, we will get a $200,000 payment from the state and then $3,000 for each unit that gets the building permit. So under the master plan that was passed by town meeting back in December, we will receive $500,000 in incentive payments from the state for the Quarry North project. Before adopting a smart growth zoning district, communities must apply to DHCD for district approval, and that's why we could not act on this back in December. We were waiting for that approval. We have received those approvals. Once we receive that approval, we can bring it to you for the vote. This is a map of the site, so you can see that the part that's in red is the smart growth overlay district, the 5.95 acres. In the smart growth overlay district, it's multifamily, commercial uses accessory only. The height is 3 stories or up to 45 feet. The planning board could allow up to 4 stories. The maximum number of allowable units would be 101. The parking requirements are 1 bedroom, 1 parking spot, 2 bedrooms, 2 parking spots, 3 bedrooms, 2 parking spots. There is business or professional office with 5 or fewer employees allowed, and that's all dictated as the master plan. Remember voting for that not too long ago. 25% of the housing must be affordable. The town does the monitoring of those affordable units, which is different than a 40B and is a good thing for us. The plan still needs to be approved by the planning board. There still needs to be public hearings. There still will be design standards.
If the 40R doesn't pass, then the Quarry North project would still go forward as a LIP. So not passing the 40R does not affect that project in any way. It just would be built under a different law. It would be a local initiative project, otherwise known as a friendly 40B. The developer would still work cooperatively with town boards to minimize density, improve setbacks. The town would still be in charge of future monitoring. The same number of units would still count towards the SHI, but we wouldn't get the $500,000. So if we don't pass this tonight, the project still goes forward. It still looks exactly the same, but we don't receive $500,000 in financial incentives from the state. Thank you.
Okay. The Finance Committee, do you have a report?
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 6-0.
And the Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
And the Planning Board? The Planning Board supports this article. Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 28? I see no one. This requires a vote of 2/3. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than 2/3. Article 29, Community Preservation Fund, SPS Playground Modernization. I'll recognize the chair of the CPC, Sherry Klein, for the motion.
Moderator. Move in the words of the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? Oh.
Do I have to finish reading?
Nope. Oh.
Should I finish? Move in the words of the article with a sum of $235,000 to be allocated from the FY20 Community Preservation Fund estimated annual revenues.
Great. Thank you. Sorry, I'm just needing to find my spot. Okay. So, we have a presentation that will be shared. Second. Thank you. right. So I will recognize Ms. Klein for the presentation to begin with, and I believe she will share part of her 10 minutes with the superintendent of schools, Brad Crozier. Is that right? Okay. Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is Sherry Klein. I'm the chair of the Community Preservation Committee. It is the tradition that the chair provides an overview and review of the Community Preservation Act in advance of the article submitted by the committee. The committee is made up of 9 members. 7 are elected members of other boards in town, and 2 are appointed by the Board of Selectmen. The committee is charged with presenting articles to the town meeting to appropriate or reserve the accumulated funds in the manner prescribed by the Community Preservation Act. The Act requires that a minimum of 10% of each year's estimated annual revenue be appropriated or reserved in each of 3 categories: community housing, historic preservation, and open space and recreation. The House focuses the use of the funds to the acquisition, creation, and preservation of the aspects of the community deemed important to the residents and approved at town meeting. The Community Preservation Act was passed at the state level in 2000 with the purpose and intent of allowing each community the option to levy a surtax of up to 3% to fund community housing and land conservation and historic preservation. Sudbury had the foresight to be one of the early adopters of the Act, which became effective in Sudbury in 2002. Since then, Sudbury's residents have shown townwide support for the proposals submitted to the committee. Some examples are applications submitted by the town clerk and the Goodnow Library for the preservation of our centuries-old documents, from the Sudbury Historical Society for the acquisition and restoration of the Loring Parsonage to house our museum, from the Park and Recreation Commission for the acquisition and creation of playing fields and tennis courts, from the Sudbury Housing Authority and the Sudbury Housing Trust for the preservation and creation of community housing, and from the town for the preservation of open spaces such as Knobscot Mountain, Pantry Brook Farm, and most recently, Broadacres Farm for both conservation and recreational purposes. The funds for these purposes come from a local surcharge on our real estate taxes and a state match. Through FY18, the surcharge has totaled over $23.5 million, and the state match has totaled almost $12 million. Every fall, the state announces what the match will be and sends a check to the town. As more cities and towns have adopted the act, the percentage of the match has decreased. Nevertheless, in FY18, Sudbury received $343,000 from the state, and in FY19, Sudbury received $403,000. The total amount of our match for this year will be announced in November. The state legislators are still working to increase the pool of money from which the match is paid. It was announced on April 25th that the House of Representatives voted 154-1 to increase the revenue source and to appropriate $10 million for additional funds for this year. In addition to evaluating the applications for eligibility under the state law and our local standards, the committee feels a responsibility to husband the resources to plan for the future. The policy was adopted at the inception of the Community Preservation Committee and has been followed ever since. Thus, funds have accumulated while earning interest and are available to increase our bonding capacity and cash reserves for large land purchases and other municipal needs that are within the allowable categories. Sudbury was able to take advantage of these savings at the October town meeting when $1,880,000 in cash was appropriated to purchase nine acres of Broadacres Farm for recreational purposes. This year, the committee reviewed applications for funds and presents them for town meeting's approval. The applications are in the categories of recreation, historic preservation, and community housing. Thank you for your consideration of these articles.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Klein. And Mr. Crozier, if you'd like your portion of the joint presentation now. Thanks. So this is on the playground modernization piece.
Thank you, Madam Moderator, and thank you for the opportunity to provide some additional information. As way of background, we are pleased to say that we are now seeking funding for the third of the four-stage project of the playground modernization program that's laid out in this slide. The playground modernization project has been a true collaboration from the town, the schools, and the community. I'm here to sort of celebrate some things. The Haynes funding through free cash at town meeting in 2017 was approved, and the playground committee was established at Haynes of a diverse number of stakeholders, which were educators, administrators, PTO, PTO representatives, building and facilities, and the DPW. Most importantly, student voice was incorporated into the playground planning project. Beginning last August, the students and community members were able to enjoy the playground and have enjoyed this playground all year, and you can see a couple pictures here. The next playground that's up is the Noyes Playground. This project funding was supported at last May's town meeting, and we're grateful again for the support of the CPC and the community with the allocation of funds from both CPC and free cash. A similar committee was formed and has been meeting regularly this year, again capturing input from students. The committee is progressing on time and according to budget. So the last day for the Noyes Playground this year will be June 17th. Lucky we didn't have too many snow days this year. And the groundbreaking is scheduled for June 18th. The Nixon Playground, tonight we are seeking approval for CPC funding, $235,000 in CPC funding, to be combined with $100,000 in grants to build the Nixon Playground. The SPS team is grateful for the additional funding and support that has been given to these projects through private organizations who have donated through fundraising opportunities and other grant allocations. Thank you to Place Sudbury, the Sudbury Foundation, the Cummings Foundation, and every individual who has donated to support to offset these town projects. Here's the playground modernization overview. Tonight we're looking for, in that third column, the Nixon approval. As Haynes was already completed, as you can see down at the bottom of this chart, Noyes is in progress. We'll be doing that groundbreaking this June. And the Loring will be seeking approval at the May 2020 town meeting in the hopes of construction in the summer of 2021. Please note that we've already secured $100,000 in grants for that Loring playground. Thank you for your support.
Great. Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a position on this?
We do, and we have the final slide of the night. Yeah, I just skipped to the final slide. So Finance Committee just gives you a quick summary of CPA before we start. So this is the income from the CPA. It's roughly $2.1 million. The state match estimate is down to around 11%. Why that's important is the state's match is around 11%, but CPC regulations require we send 20% on different areas. So the state match is now less than the amount that being required to spend in open space, historic preservation, and affordable housing. When you take the expenses out on the green side, you can see that leaves us about $893,000 for new projects. And there's about $3.3 million in unreserved cash sitting in the bank. Of the $893,000, we can put a certain amount of that to debt if we wanted to drive for more debt service, but it's only about $3 to $4 million in incremental debt that they can take on. So with that, the Finance Committee recommends approval of the Article 5 to 0.
Great. Thank you. And the Selectmen? Selectman Simon?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Great. Thanks. And the CIAC, Ms. Gossels?
Jamie Gossel, Spiller Circle. The CIAC recommends approval of this article by a vote of 6 to 0.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 29? I see no one, so we'll proceed to a vote. This is requires a majority for passage. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. And now I need to let you know that it is past 10:30, but we only have a handful of articles left to do, so I would entertain a motion. Our bylaws, just to explain, require us to adjourn if it's past 10:30 unless we all agree to stay. And the way that we agree to do that is for someone to make a motion that we stay and finish the remaining handful of articles. And the required vote for this is 2/3. So if I could have such a motion. Thank you. And a second? Okay. All in favor of finishing the warrant? Thank you. All opposed? That passes by well more than 2/3. Thank you very much for staying. I really appreciate all of this, and I know it's just really important to the town that we have such dedicated town meeting attendees, so shout out to everybody who's still here. Thanks so much. All right, Article 30.
Yes, thank you for staying.
Yes, and I don't want the CPC to feel like nobody cares because it's the end of the evening, but we all care very deeply, so thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
And I'll now recognize you for the motion under Article 30.
Okay. Move in the words of the article with a sum of $220,000 to be allocated from FY20 Community Preservation Fund estimated annual revenues.
Thank you. Is there a second? Yes. And I will now recognize Mara Houston from the Park and Rec Commission for the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Again, my name is Mara Houston. I am the Park and Rec Commission representative for the CPC. So we're going to talk about Featherland Courts. Do I push buttons? All right, so a little perspective first on the project. It was initially built, the two courts were initially built in 61, then another two courts in 65, recoded in 66, 76, and then rebuilt again in 87. During this winter of 2014, 2015, the fences were damaged, and so everything was taken down, and there were major cracks on the courts, so we went back for the project to redo it in 2017. We were able to complete two of the courts, within in fall of 2018, and now we're here to talk about the other two. A little bit of history since 2015. PRC has been acting as a response to the outcry of the community to replace the damaged courts. And the Ellis Tennis Court coach has also said that the JV program depends on the Federland courts, mostly because of their proximity to Ellis. So back in 2016, we had an interim park and rec director who obtained a quote to do some of the projects. It was passed at town meeting. It was not CPC funds. It did not pass at town election. In 2017, we came back to try again, and we used CPC funds, and that did pass CPC funds. And that was based off a budgetary quote by a reputable tennis organization. Okay, so since annual town meeting in 2017, what have we done? September is when DPW informed the PRC the design was starting to use with the original allocation. In the February, the DPW contracted a landscape architect, and then in March, Dan Nason, DPW director, informed PRC that the original funds may not be sufficient. At this point in March, we were too late to come back for anything for annual town meeting of 2018. So then in May, we kept on working towards the project, and the PRC voted to follow on with DPW's recommendation supporting the community needs. Construction started in July, completed in October, and then November we submitted a new request to continue on with this project. So that's where we are right now. So phase one originally was the complete thing, but this is phase one, as it turns out, was survey, bid, and design costs and construction for the two courts that include four pickleball courts. We have remaining funds over $36,000. Sunshine Paving was the lowest bidder in that bid process. They built two courts with pickleball to very high quality standards, and DPW is very pleased with their construction. Phase two, here we are again. So another, we're asking for more money to finish the last two courts. These other two courts will have the four basketball courts on them, four basketball half court on them. LS has pledged $10,000 towards this project because it represents the importance that it has to the LS JV tennis program. There are $36,000+ remaining from phase one to be used for this project, and we've already confirmed we can use it for this project. Sunshine, we've already gone to bid. Sunshine Paving was the lowest bidder. They came in at $228,000, and if this passes tonight, they'll be the ones to do this project again. Again, the layout's going to be the same, wheelchair accessible. It's going to have the four courts of basketball in there, too. This is what a half court of basketball looks on the end of a tennis court, okay? So tennis is going to be no problem. The basketball court's hoops out of the way, but then basketball can get there and play. And if someone's playing basketball on one half court, the other tennis court's fully available for tennis. So it works out really well. And that's also a very common pattern in other places, too. You'll see a lot of tennis courts with half-court basketball on it. All right, so DPW process going forward, their focus is design and build for longevity. The original budgetary quotes from 2016-2017 were not based on design specifications. Dan Nason came to us and said it wants design specifications, so the Park and Rec Commission agreed to that proposal. The phase one and phase two are being built based on very, very tight design specifications done by a landscape architect to ensure high quality results. Going forward, the DPW will be using the following process: design, bid, request funds, and then build. For phase two, we've done the design, done the bid, we're requesting funds, and then we're going to build. Please support us.
Okay, thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Finance Committee does not support Article 30 by a vote of 0, 4, and 5 against. The majority of the Finance Committee believes that given the circumstances that we originally passed this at the 2017 town meeting for $220,000 to build four tennis courts, the majority of the Finance Committee believes that once the Park and Rec believed that they could not complete the four courts, the more fiscally responsible process would have been to come back to town meeting to request additional amount before going ahead with any part of the project.
Okay, thank you. And the selectmen? Ms. Brown?
The selectmen support this article.
And the CIAC?
Jamie Gossel, Spiller Circle. The CIAC recommends approval of this article by a vote of 6-0.
Great, thank you. Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 30? Yes, all the way in the back.
Thank you. Shirley Hittig, 54 Wake Robin Road. I just have a quick question. I'm in support of building the remaining two tennis courts. You're asking for $220,000. The bid was for $228,000, but then it seemed that you referred to $46,000 coming from various other funding sources, and I'm wondering why you're asking for so much money if there is that $46,000 available.
Ms. Houston.
We will be turning back any excess money back to CPC. We don't want to be cut short in case of contingencies. In case something comes up in the construction, they find something that's not right. They didn't find any issues in phase one, so we're not expecting anything in phase two, but you never know. And we're just trying to be careful and not have to come back for $5,000 more if there's a problem.
Okay, thank you. Yes, sir.
Chris Thompson, 178 Horse Pond Road. Is phase two the same scope as phase one, or is it larger?
It's
larger because it's not larger in terms of space, in terms of dimensions, but it's more material because of the basketball hoops. There's a fair bit of steel in the basketball hoops and the posts that support the basketball hoops.
There were no hoops in the first phase.
There was no. There was the only thing beyond the tennis courts was pickleball, which was basically pickleball lines.
So hoops and escalation are $58,000 more than the first phase?
DPW can talk about the...
It just seems like a big jump. It's 1 year ago you built the first two?
2017 we came to request. They built the first two for $170,000. The bid is $228,000. That's what they came back with. They went through the public bid process.
How many bids did you receive? Multiple bids or just one?
There were two bids that came in. One was $228,000. One was $230,000-something.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you. Does anyone else wish to be heard on Article 30? I don't think I see anybody. All right. I'm sorry. Someone's... Yes. Oh, Jean, thank you for getting my attention. Ms. Nam.
Hi, Jean Nam, 81 Newbridge Road. I just wanted to talk about the LSJV team. LS presented their budget to the Finance Committee several times this year and also presented again to the Board of Selectmen. And they talk about capital needs. They talk about a tractor they needed to buy. They talked about how next year they want to fix the football field. The subject of the tennis courts never came up. The subject of $10,000 pledged to this project never came up. So I just want to just put that out there.
Okay. Mr. Began, unless Ms. Houston would rather, did you want to address that? Okay.
So I just asked Mark to put up an email that I got today from Art Riley, who is the athletic director at LS, talking about the importance of the fields for the JV tennis program. These are his words. I can read it if you want me to read it. I'm not sure I need to.
I don't think we need to have it.
I want it up there so people can read it and see what Art says.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now I think we're ready to vote. Mr. DePompei, before we vote, do you have something new to say? Or
you? I think so.
Then I will recognize you. Yep.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Dan DePompei, 35 Haines Road. This project's been going on for 3 years now, and it's been bad estimates. I know the difference between a design spec and a performance spec. It seems to me either one would have worked. But we presented this to the town in good faith. Four courts for $220,000. And then when we found out it was going to cost twice as much, we proceeded with the project without, to my knowledge, reporting it to higher authority. Now, perhaps the town manager can say it did come into her and she knew about it, but it sounds to me like this whole thing proceeded basically in secrecy. And now, 3 years later, we've taken the 2017 project and referred to it as phase one, labeled it now as phase two, and asking for the same amount of money. Seems to me we ought to get some kind of commitments from somebody as how we're going to improve our performance in the future before we go ahead and just give extra money. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll let Mr. Began speak. He's had his hand raised.
Robert Began, Park and Rec Commission. I know, Commissioner, I know how much you guys want to get out of here, so do I. I'll try to answer that. No secrecy whatsoever. Actually, in I think it was in the slides, 2015, there was a huge outcry. Over 50 people came to a hearing that we had. There was multiple letters to town manager. BOS can speak to it. So when we basically found out that the that the bidder that we were going with wasn't going to be able to do the total of four quarts, there was the vote was just to basically try to get what we could get done. There wasn't anything malicious about it or anything else like that. We were like, if we don't do anything, you know, the LS isn't going to be able to use the quarts, and the community's not going to be able to use the quarts, and it's really that, it's that simple. I'm not saying it was, you know, ideal what happened, but it is what happened.
Okay, great. Now I think we're ready to vote. So this requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by more than a majority. Article 31. I will recognize Ms. Klein for the motion.
Thank you. Move in the words of the article with a sum of $30,000 to be allocated to the community housing category, funded from the FY20 Community Preservation Fund estimated annual revenues.
Thank you. Is there a second? Great. And I'll recognize the town manager for a presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I'm going to try to do this in one slide.
All right, one slide.
I'm going to use this one. Okay. So today we're requesting $30,000 to pay for Sudbury's contract with the Regional Housing Services Office. And what that is 7 communities that have a regional collaboration. We all have a party to an intermunicipal agreement. And since I created this slide, Burlington has actually let us know over the last few days that they're going to be leaving the Regional Housing Services Office. So we gained Wayland and we lost Burlington. And what we do, basically, is have our housing services done by a consultant rather than doing them through the planning office. And so we started this around 2011, and it was basically just an effort to create a regionalization of housing administrative efforts. So they do a lot of our monitoring for us. They help with our inventory management. If there's affordable units that come up, they do the lottery for those and all of the applications. This is very important because we are trying to stay above our 10% for the 40B law, and this is what helps us do that. That's it.
Great. Thank you. Thanks. The Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval, Article 31, 6-0.
And the Selectmen?
The Selectmen support this article.
Would anyone like to be heard under Article 31? I see no one. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Article 32, I'll recognize Ms. Klein for the motion.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Move in the words of the article with a sum of $181,900 to be allocated to the community housing category from the FY20 Community Preservation Fund estimated annual revenues and the sum of $138,100 to be allocated from the FY20 Community Preservation Fund estimated annual revenues.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thanks. And I will recognize you to do a presentation.
Thank you. In 2014, Benai Barith Housing completed the Coolidge at Sudbury in phase one. BBH is a nonprofit developer with a mission to build high-quality, affordable housing in Boston and the Metro West area. Phase one is a 64-unit apartment building located at 189 Boston Post Road on the corner of Boston Post Road and Lantham Road. The apartments are for low-income seniors, and the building is completely full with a long waiting list. This is another picture of phase one and another of phase one. This is what you see from Route 20. And you can see from these photographs the quality of the design and maintenance of the property. The developers are now in the process of building a twin building adjacent to phase one, known as the Coolidge at Sudbury, phase two. Phase two will contain 56 rental units, which, as in phase one, will be one-bedroom apartments for low-income residents aged 55 and over. This development has been in the works for many years. Benibrith Housing and the Sudbury Planning Department worked together to obtain a comprehensive building permit for phase two, which was granted by the Zoning Board of Appeals in March of 2017. The project is being funded by a combination of competitively awarded state and federal subsidies, private financing, and local support in the form of West Metro Home Consortium funds and funding from the Sudbury Housing Trust. The Coolidge requested CPA funds in the fall 2018 CPC application process. The initial request to the committee was for $631,000. However, in keeping with the committee's policy to make awards within our current year's budget, the committee voted to recommend $320,000 to town meeting. Because the cost of construction continues to increase, the developers were anxious to proceed to closing the loans with the state this spring and begin the construction, which is scheduled to take 16 months. Indeed, the closing at the state level took place 2 weeks ago on April 26th, and there was a groundbreaking, which took place on May 3rd. The town was represented at the groundbreaking by Selectman Hardy, who spoke about the importance and need for quality options for low-income senior citizens in Sudbury. To summarize, the project will create new units of housing for low-income seniors, which statistics show is a growing population in Sudbury. The project has received strong support from the town and the state, and the CPA funds are required to ensure the quality of the overall project. The resulting units will be an asset to Sudbury. Thank you for your support of this article.
Thank you very much. Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Finance Committee supports Article 32, 6-0. Important to note here is that, and we're on track for this, is that we need to get the occupancy permits completed for Coolidge within 18 months to make sure we stay in compliance with 40B. So this article is very important for passage.
Okay, and the selectmen?
Board of Selectmen support Article 32.
Great. Would anyone like to be heard under Article 32? I see no one, so we'll proceed to the vote. The vote needs to be a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? Passes by well more than a majority. Article 33. Ms. Klein for the motion.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $25,000 to be allocated to the historic resources category funded from FY20 Community Preservation Fund estimated annual revenues.
Thank you. Is there a second? Okay. I saw a second. Thanks. And I'll now recognize Esme Green, the library director, for the presentation. Thank you for your patience.
The clicker, Mark? Okay. All right. Oh, don't put that version up. Okay, that's fine. Hi, good evening. Thanks for staying. I'm Esme Green. I'm the library director. Tonight we are requesting $25,000 to digitize Sudbury's local newspapers going back to 1915. The Goodnow Library has been preserving Sudbury's local papers for many years by microfilming it. And while microfilm is an excellent way to preserve the material, it is not so easy to access and search it in that form. So currently, you see that we have a big drawer full of reels of microfilm and a machine that's kind of hard to use, and then you get this image on the screen that you have to fiddle with to get it right. So you have to search everything manually. The equipment's a little complicated, and you have to search every single thing page by page to find what you're looking for. So if we were to digitize our collection, users would be able to search by keyword or subject term whenever and wherever is convenient, from home, any time of day. Just for a scope of the project, what we're looking at is, I keep forgetting to turn the pages. We have improved accessibility.
I just want to say, you have a tablet that will show you what's on the screen, so you don't have to turn around.
No wonder I'm having so much trouble.
That's
okay.
Quite all right. No, you'll be able to see there.
Great. So you can see here that it will improve our accessibility and searchability, and it will create a backup for the files. Just in terms of what papers we're covering, there's the Enterprise, the Citizen, Fence Viewer, and they have all of these ranges of unique local information that are not able to be found anywhere else. The advantages of digitizing now are that we're going to improve our access and preserve this one-of-a-kind material. And finally, I thought I would just leave you with this comic that appeared in 1983 in one of our local papers that one of my staff left on my desk for me. And it says, Sudbury's Goodnow Library seeking funds to cure flooding and termites. Well, I think we solved the termite problem. They can't swim. So that's from spring of 1983. So thank you very much, and thanks for your consideration.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a position?
The Finance Committee supports Article 33 by 6-0 vote.
And the Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 33? Yes, sir.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I am an enthusiastic supporter of this as a genealogy junkie the past few years. Some of the most interesting information I've found about my family from the 1880s are from newspapers.com. So I have two questions, actually one question. Will this be made available to sources like newspaper.com for searching?
Ms. Green, do you have an answer? That's okay. Yeah, take your time.
If we can, we will, because we're all about accessibility. And we will own all of the content up to a certain year, which will be free from copyright. So I think it would be shareable in that way. So whatever we can share, that's what we like to do. Great. Did you have a second question? Or? Oh, okay.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else? Thank you. Yes, sir.
I'm very excited about this article. I'm working on...
Oh, yes, sorry, your name and address.
I'm sorry. Steve Green, 36 Elaine Road. I'm working on a Sudbury Historical Society presentation on the history of post offices in Sudbury. And I'm at the point where I really need to dive into those newspapers. Let me give you just one example. 1897... In one of the famous scrapbooks that the Historic Society has, there's a little snippet out of a paper that talks about the appointment of an assistant postmaster in North Sudbury. Now, North Sudbury was a place where there were no more than 20 farms, and getting information on how the post office moved up and down the what they call the North Road or the Great Road is quite a mystery. I'm really in support of this article. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Did I see someone in the balcony who had something to say? Yes, sir. If you could use a microphone. Thanks. And thank you to the young person up there who's helping with the mic. I don't even know who you are, but I appreciate the help.
Brian Krupman, 26 Hallowell Road. I want to ask, what's the $25,000 estimate based on? Is this going to be done by an external contractor who can digitize analog to digital microfilm?
Yes, absolutely. So there are several contractors who do this service, and it is approximately 20 cents per page that is digitized, and we have about 150,000 pages. And so it's going to cost us about $30,000, but we're going to use a Goodnow Trust funds to cover $5,000 of it.
Great. Thank you. Yes, over here. You might as well stay.
Debbie Hertig, 360 Old Lancaster Road.
Well, the mic didn't work. Hang on one second. Thanks.
Debbie Hertig, 360 Old Lancaster Road. I don't public speak, and it has gone out of my head.
That's okay. It's late. That's okay.
I'm really curious now.
I know, right?
Oh, I know what it was. Okay. you've picked 1915 for a date. There were newspapers before that.
This would encompass the totality of what we already have on microfilm right now at the library. So this is the holdings that we personally have.
Okay, so this is going from microfiche to
microfilm to digital, like a digital online file.
Okay, great. I think we're ready to vote. this requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed?
Thank you.
That passes by well more than a majority. Article 34, Ms. Klein.
Move in the words of the article and appropriate the sum of $63,000 to be allocated to the historic resources category and the FY20 Community Preservation Fund estimated annual revenues.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. And I understand someone from the Historical Society is making the presentation. Yes.
Thank you. I'm Stuart Hoover. First of all, I'm Stuart Hoover from the Sudbury Historical Society, 36 Evergreen Road. So we're looking for funding for the VESBA, or an early fire protection system for the Loring Parsonage. And just a quick review of the Loring Parsonage. The Loring Parsonage was built for Reverend Loring in 1730. It's very historic. It's in the center of town. It's been everything from a family farm to a tavern, bought by the town, listed in the Massachusetts Registry. Some have said it's as historic as the Wayside Inn. We won't debate that point, but it's a very historic building. Here's what it looked like before the town bought it, way, way before the town bought it. This is what it looked like about 6 months ago. This is what it looks like today, and we hope that this is what it's, the architectural rendering here is correct, and this is what it's going to look like in just a couple more months. And the Historical Society is looking forward to have a certificate of occupancy in a matter of months. Part of the construction, there is fire protection. It has one or more smoke detectors or alarms in every room. They'll be connected to the fire station. There'll be a motion detector. But the problem is that smoke alarms fall short, as they often detect fire after the fire has begun. A more sensitive, what they call an aspirating smoke detection, or VESBA, a system was part of our initial plan, but it was crowded out by the high cost of construction. Okay. What's being protected? At the completion of the restoration and repurposing of the Loring Parsonage into the Sudbury History Center, we will have invested nearly $2 million in this project. Okay. More money will be invested outfitting the building, and this will be done by the Historical Society. Stored in the building are going to be the SHS collection. Many of these items have significant value. Others have great historic value. Now, keep in mind, the Historical Society will lease the building for 30 years, but the Loring Parsonage remains a town-owned building. Okay, what does VESBA provide us? It's a system that continuously monitors the air. At the earliest occurrence of smoke, it's detected before a standard smoke detector could pick it up. It buys very critical time needed for speedy intervention, protects infrastructure, all of the high-valued assets which are in the building. Okay. How does it work? It just continually is sampling the air, and as the air and filtered through little sensors or in the ceiling, and it just is continuously monitoring the air and passed through a laser system, and if smoke's detected, it sets off the alarm. This is a typical example of what it would look like, where you'd have pipes in the ceiling and these little snifters at the in the ceiling constantly monitoring the VESBA, or constantly monitoring the air through the VESBA system. I believe we had community support. The fire chief is behind this, and the Sudbury Historical Commission is also recommending that this be done. Just to be dramatic, here are a few examples of museum fires, or like museum fires. Notre Dame, a museum of Brazil goes down, even P.T. Barnum's museum was burned. That is, museums, they burn quite easily, and so we have to have good protection. It's very standard. We have one in Sudbury already in the Hosmer House. Look through this list. Harvard University has them all over the place. Verizon has them. MIT has them. The Museum of Fine Arts has them. Even here in Marlborough, they have them. So it's very, very standard technology. So we'd like to thank you for your support for bringing the Historical Center, History Center, to where it is today. And we hope you'll support this article. Thank you.
Thank you. The Finance Committee for a position.
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 34, 6-0.
And the Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 34? I see no one. So this requires a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Any opposed? Not Sherry Klein, I assume. Got to get the card down. That passes by well more than a majority. And so that brings us to our last article. And just because I know what will happen as soon as that is over, I want to say a few things while I still have all of your, I have your attention. The biggest thing I want to say is a huge round of applause and thanks to our town staff, led so ably by the people on stage and everybody here. Most people in town have no idea how hard they work, and so one of the best parts of being moderator is to be able to interface with all of these amazing professionals that we have. So huge shout out to them. And I want to also thank all of you and everyone who was here over the course of the last 2 days for participating. It's the only way that we get this stuff done, and it sometimes is frustrating, but it's still a really great way to run a town, so thank you. And let's see. The town clerk has also asked me to remind any recently elected or appointed officials that they should take the oath of office from her at the conclusion of tonight's meeting if they're here, or else you can also go by her office during office hours to do it. And as I said before, there will be an election on June 4th. Okay, and one last thing. According to Article 4, Section 1 of the town bylaws, it is the responsibility of the moderator to appoint members to vacant seats on the Finance Committee before the end of annual town meeting. This year, the terms of 3 members are set to expire, and 1 member wishes to step down ahead of his term expiring next year. Thus, I have 4 positions to fill. Current member Jeffrey Atwater is willing to continue to serve. Accordingly, I have reappointed him to a new 3-year term. Thank you.
I also want to thank outgoing members Jeffrey Barker, Adrian Davies, and Glenn Migliozzi for their service to the town on this very important committee. It is one of the more time-intensive volunteer commitments that one could make, and I appreciate all the hours that you have put in on behalf of the town. In order to fill the vacant positions, I solicited applicants by posting on the town's website and on the local Facebook group One Sudbury. After reviewing applications and conducting interviews of the most qualified candidates, I am pleased to announce my appointment of Ronald Brumback and Scott Smigler to 3-year terms and Christopher Carmody to a 1-year term. I'm confident that each will bring to this commitment superlative finance skills as well as a collaborative and dedicated attitude. Thank you all. And that brings us to Article 35. And now, Ms. Klein, for the final motion of the evening.
Okay, this will be quick. Move to appropriate from FY20 Community Preservation Fund estimated annual revenues the following sums as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee for FY20 Community Preservation Budget: $85,000 for committee administrative and operating costs, and $1,140,210 for debt service.
Is there a second? Great. And Ms. Klein for the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. This article sets out the budget for the upcoming fiscal year, including authorization to pay the debt on the purchase of the property interests on the farms and open space Sudbury has acquired over the years. The article also appropriates funds for the administrative budget of the Community Preservation Committee in the amount of $85,000. The statute allows the committee to appropriate up to 5% of the estimated annual revenue per year for administrative purposes, which would be approximately $106,000. However, Sudbury has consistently budgeted less than the maximum amount. These funds can be used by the committee to pay for time-sensitive expenses associated with community projects, such as property appraisals and other administrative expenses, such as the committee's share of legal counsel and staffing expenses. Any administrative funds not spent by the end of the year are returned to the committee fund balance and must be reappropriated every year.
Great. Thank you. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 35-60.
And the selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Would anyone like to be heard on Article 35? I see no one. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. And now our final act is to dissolve this meeting. So I will entertain a motion to dissolve this annual town meeting. I heard a so moved. Thank you. Is there a second? Yes. This needs to pass by a majority. All in favor of dissolution? Great. And all opposed? That passes easily by well more than a majority. Thank you very much. Good night.